us, but they can't.
John, with Drew and Leslie, get the shit on. Interracial John, shut the fuck up and listen. Interracial John, interracial John, interracial shit motherfuckers, shut up and listen. Drew and Leslie, interracial John.
And welcome to the Interracial Drama Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a middlingly, irritatingly very white guy.
And you are very white indeed.
I thought you were going to say very irritating.
No, not yet. Anyways, we'll see how the show goes.
I'm trying.
Well, we've been away for like more than a week. It's bad.
It's terrible. And we had Rod and Karen on, and we had some, let's be honest, they're a podcast like kick in the pants from like an attendance and subscribers base. Like whenever they come on the show, we get a bunch of people. We probably should have done a show right away, but
should have. You know, it all sounds good until, you know, we needed to go babysit a couple days last week, which was really awesome and fun. But yeah, so anyways, if this is your first time joining us, welcome. And we're so happy to have you here. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. Please subscribe via iTunes or Stitcher. We love that. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John, again, J-A-W-N. And we love feedback.
Yeah, you guys, come on.
Yes, you can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. If it's 5 stars, we will read your review here on the air. We also love to get emails. You can send your emails to interracialjohn@gmail.com. And you can also send us a voicemail. And you can send that. You can just call up 657-JOHNERS. That's 657-JAWNERS. If it's under 3 minutes, we will play it here on the air. And shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips for our general feedback rules.
Yeah. Do we have a review that I didn't get to?
Uh-oh, do we?
Yeah, we did. We got one in the other day.
Yay!
Should I play the music? I don't have it queued up.
Oh, if you don't have it queued up, then.
Hold on. You know, I'll save it for the next episode. But we do have a review. Put in a review. I didn't check iTunes. My bad. We'll get it next time. Sorry, folks.
Awesome.
But please leave reviews.
Yeah, please leave us some reviews. We did have some emails.
Oh, good.
So I was going to read that. Hiroja sent us a couple of emails, and we didn't get them before we recorded each of these shows, but she says, this is from last week, she's a strangeness of the net. To Drew and Leslie, I'm not new to Twitter or the internet, but the whole Boy George interaction that you had this week was one of the strangest things I've personally seen in a very long time. I hope you're all right and prevailed in slaying that just awful man. Hope you and Drew had a great show. Hey, Rod and Karen.
I'm with you, Roger. I really, when she came up, she's like, I'm doing this thing. She's like saying something like, what? She goes, I'm getting in a Twitter fight with Boy George. I was like, the Boy George? Boy George? Like, I couldn't believe it. And then I read the kind of timeline, and I'm not just pumping up you because you're my wife and shit, but like, you kind of tore him apart. Like, it was a really good
dragging. I had time,
dragging.
Like I said, I had time.
You brought all them receipts.
The other one is a little bit longer, and it's from a listener named Tim. He says, Portland is the most racist state article satire. He says, hey, I'm a relatively new listener to the podcast. I really like what y'all do. Keep it up. The article you cited about Portland is from a satirical news site. Uh-oh. Check out their disclaimer that states all news articles contained within National Report are fiction and presumably fake. Oh, man.
You know what? And I don't know if it's the same publication, but there was another one that had a really – Nick Jew and Reggie talked about it on their show.
Oh, really?
And what was it they just
It was the Sarah Palin thing.
The Sarah Palin thing.
Right,
and that was
right,
from
right.
– and I don't – it's weird. It's an amalgamation of
real
trolling.
Facts.
Yeah, but it's trolling clickbait. Like they put in these headlines and these things to get you to get to it. But it's presented side by side exactly –
with actual facts.
Yeah. So it's like how am
do
I
you
supposed
know?
Yeah, am I supposed to ascertain what's bullshit right. and what's not? And the secret for me is it in any other publication? If it's in that one, it's bullshit.
Okay, well, he says, that being said, I thought your comments rang true about the pervasive and pernicious racism in the Northwest and in progressivism generally. Here are some legit resources on racism in Oregon, notably all led by people of color, and he gives us some links. I'll include all of those in the show notes for folks. He says, on the positive side, Portland Community College is doing some amazing work to confront white supremacy by hosting Whiteness History Month at its 4 campuses. They frame it as, quote, a multidisciplinary district-wide educational project examining race and racism through an exploration of the construction of whiteness, its origins, and heritage. Sounds cool.
Yeah, and I do know the whiteness, what they've been doing, that sort of Whiteness History Month. Mm-hmm. In fact, Crazy Pastor online, his name is Joey, he did a bit for March calling it Whiteness History Month as well. And I think that's great work, but I still stand by the sort of the Oregon's past as being a white supremacist utopia, the abolishing or wiping out of Vanport, the town, and even, like you said, some of the hipstery stuff. I don't know who said it, but maybe it was MLK. Other people have said it, just the liberal whites are the biggest impediment, just the hugest impediment.
He goes on to say one positive thing some white folks in Portland, myself included, is showing up for racial justice. Surge PDX is a Portland-based chapter focusing on educating, organizing, and mobilizing white people to work for racial justice led by people of color. Sorry to write such a long uber hyperlinked email. I probably could have captured that. Captured and gotten my point across in one sentence. That article you cited about Portland being the most racist is fake, but Portland is still a racist place. Your podcast is awesome. Cheers, Tim. Thanks for your email, Tim. Thank you, appreciate Tim. You getting us those links. And like I said, I'll put all of them in our show notes for this week. Yeah, so
verbose, as loquacious as you need to be, Tim. Yeah. We'll read it. Yes. You're good.
As long as it's not crazy.
So I can't remember who it is. I don't want to maybe put their name out on our podcast. But sure. Someone I engaged with on Facebook had wrote to me, kind of DM'd me maybe a couple weeks ago about the just something that I had said on Twitter or Facebook that kind of spurred them to think about things. And they were kind of like thanking me, like, oh, I did this thing. It was really great. And I was like, oh, that wasn't, thank you for that. I didn't, that wasn't my intent or goal. I'm glad that you took something from that interaction.
Right.
But as we're having this exchange, we're, how are you doing? What's kind of going on? We're talking about stuff. And I mentioned that, I broke down lamentably and just started a Surge chapter here in Grand Rapids because there just isn't anything going on for white folks here in Grand Rapids.
Or black folks.
Or
Taking the fifth. Let's call a thing a thing.
So she was like, oh, I'm surprised to hear you say you're starting a Surge chapter. You and Leslie were kind of harsh on him on the podcast, a couple of different things. And I still have those, I would say, various issues. And I'm not trying to start a chapter to, like, be like a nuisance to them, like, and be like, oh, look what they're doing wrong. Like, that's not my goal. But I do want to see kind of like, okay, what are you doing? And maybe where are there some things that we could do better? But when I say I broke down, did it, there just was nothing here. There was no other options. And right. Surge has a name, good, bad, and different. They're the the first name you think of, anyone media thinks of when you talk about white people doing actions.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I do have issue with the kind of 7 million figure. I sometimes have issue with the raising money and not sharing it directly with Black Liberation rather than, like you said, they requested it versus they took it in and actually gave half.
Right.
But, they're flexing and getting better and, they're not perfect like anybody else. And I don't know enough about the organization or institution to say good, bad, or indifferent, but I'll start one here and I'll let people know and see how it goes and what comes of it, if anything.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. I'm interested to hear. I think we're going to talk in a little bit about something else, sort of related to that, a conversation we had. So I called my mom earlier this week. I do that from time to time. Not as much as she would want me to, but I do it from time to time.
What am I, chopped liver?
So anyways, I call her, and, my birthday's coming up in a few months, and we're going out. We're going to go see Hamilton, as people know, and, we're going to be out east in New York. And I told you that I wanted to, on one of the Saturdays that we're there, have dinner with the family. So I called my mom, and I was like, hey, mom, blah, blah, blah. We're talking. Catch up. And then I said, so I wanted to just ask a quick question about my birthday weekend. Are we going to go to a restaurant and all have dinner together? Or she has, like, a community room she can rent at the condo complex or whatever. I said, or are you going to rent the room and we'll do something there? I just wanted to know because it's a Saturday night in the summer and, like, it's New York City. So I wanted to start looking for a restaurant now versus waiting to the last minute. Literally, this is my entire query to her. I said, Do we need to look for a restaurant or did you already, get the room? She's like, no, I got the room. Great. No problem. That sounds good. It'll be great. I really wasn't going to worry about anything else. And then I said, oh, should I invite other people to the dinner? And she goes, yeah, you can invite some people. How many people? And I go, I don't know. Not many. A few. Really, I just wanted to be the family, whatever. And she goes, yeah, but you have to tell people way in advance because it's a holiday and people make plans and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'll put it together, whatever. And then she goes, well, this is exactly how it went down. She goes, well, Drew and I were supposed to be doing this as a surprise for you.
Yeah. Thanks, mom. Good on you. She
didn't even try to ask. I literally was asking for like the easiest of things. She literally could be like, no, yeah, yeah, I got the room. It's all covered. No problem.
Yeah, I know what happened. You asked about where, and she said the room.
Right.
And then when the room, it's like a big room. It's not like a restaurant. Like you can invite people to the room. There's no like problem with having more people in the party room, right?
Right.
So as soon as you knew it was the room, you went right to, oh, can I invite some of my friends? And Mom answered in a way that was, I think she thought giving up the fact that it was a surprise.
Which
like,
she didn't.
Which she didn't. Like, you didn't really confuse her, but, like, you kind of did. Like, you tripped her up, right?
Well,
like,
I got confused by the end of it. So, something.
Well, but so.
The best part of the story, though, is two of my favorite parts is one, I immediately go to Twitter and I tweet that she ruined the surprise. I tag you and I go, Drew's going to be so mad. And I'm up all the way upstairs and you're down here in the basement in the office working. And I hear you go, are you kidding me? All the way upstairs. I just burst out laughing because I'm like, oh, he saw the tweet. So you come upstairs and we're laughing.
Just because there was so much, like, and even like, so she tells me, like, remember when she was here? We talked about it when she was here.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was like
February.
7 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. So we talk about it. I'm like, all right, we can do this. What should we do? Okay. And she really wanted to make it a surprise party. I'm like, all right, you know. But as soon as she says it in my mind, I'm like, no way. No way Leslie's going to get surprised with this. It's just not going to happen. Like in my mind, I start doing the like, okay, maybe we can get past this. But then there's like a best case scenario. I was like, what am I going to do to get her to be like dressed up and looking good to go somewhere on Saturday, but then like, we're not really going anywhere. We're staying here. Like, no way. And there's going to be people in and out. I knew there was never going to be a surprise. It wasn't going to
like, it wasn't
going to
be like, I walk in and like, oh my God, look at all these people. Correct. I didn't even know they was going to be here.
That surprise is like a month after your birthday. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not possible.
You have to
it's
do that
possible.
For like my 42nd birthday. Yeah. You can pull it off of that.
But
right?
So I knew it wasn't going to work, but I was like, we could put a little college effort into it. So we did a couple things. We got like, I went on your computer while you were gone and I'm like going through your emails trying to like catch and people don't fucking freak out. It's not like I'm fucking going through emails like we share everything in bank accounts and purses, but I'm looking for your list of friends. I'm right. Like, okay, I got one group of people that I knew were in New York, like Justice League, and so other people like, oh, okay, great. I got all these different things. I got a good list, like 20 names.
Right.
And I had an email like, hey, this is the date. We're going to try and do this. If you know anybody else.
Oh, you sent an email?
No, I didn't. Because what I did is I had the email written. I had all the names and I wanted to write to each person personally in case it was somebody like, I didn't want to be like, well, who's this? This is weird. Like, because they don't probably know my email.
Or right.
You know, some of them knew me. I would probably gone. There was a list of like, you know, like Linda Sars. There's people I know that know me.
Right.
Like, okay, I can go to them first. And then after that, there's the email being like, you know, hey, my name's Drew. I'm like, my husband. This and that. Like, I was going to have an introduction to me and Valerie. The whole list.
Sure.
So I had the email written. I had the list of names. And Mom's like, hammer me. She's like, because before I got the list of emails, she's like, did you do it? Leslie's out of the house. You got to do it. Like, she kept like kind of bugging me while you were gone. I'm like, I'll do it. Jeez Louise.
Oh, that's so funny.
So she was really insistent. I'm like, okay, I got it. I got the names. I'm ready to go. Got the email. And it was maybe like, I don't know what, like 5 days, 6 days later?
Yeah. I call her. She didn't call me about it.
Yeah.
So I was cracking up. And then a couple of days later, you called her.
Well, I waited. I wanted a good best dish served, revenge, cold, whatever it is. I waited the right amount of time.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, Mom, what's going on?
So you have her on speaker.
Oh, yeah.
And you immediately start with, Mom. You told Leslie about the party, and immediately she screams out, she tricked me.
First thing out of her mouth. She tricked me.
I did not trick you, Mom.
She tricked her. She tricked me. You are like Krupmela Plotkin, the German evil torturer.
No, it's like apparently I have Inception level trickery skills. So
something, man.
Anyways, it won't be a surprise party. And and nobody that's listening that knows me, don't expect an invitation either. So, yeah.
For fuck's sake, that was beautiful. It didn't even get like, invitations didn't even go out.
It's ridiculous.
And I'm like, she made it sound like you had her on like with bamboo shoes under her nails.
Yeah, I even said like, so what's really going on, Mom? I had no idea. Like literally until the moment she said it, I hadn't even fathomed that anybody was planning anything. Cause in my mind, we're planning a family dinner. Big deal. And no offense to the rest of my family, but planning a family dinner on my family means I am planning a family dinner. It doesn't mean anybody else is doing anything. So that's kind of, that's the only reason why I called it off, because don't nobody in my family do anything.
The other thing I was really, again, like low key because of what you just said, I was like, oh dear Lord, I can't be in charge of this. Like this can't be like my, this is
no,
not my
and
cup
it's
of
not
tea.
Like you have other people to lean on. Like no offense, I love my family dearly, but if we're talking about throwing an event or a party, that they, yeah, no. Yeah. I do that.
Well, I'll just say
that's
me. The things I know you would have wanted in any kind of party, your mom's wholly incapable, and I'm unequipped.
I did think of a theme. I won't say it here on the air, but okay. I did think of one. Okay. So yeah, think about that.
I don't know if the genres can hear our problematic white woman dog, Beatrice.
Oh, my God.
Has she been lippy lately? Or
Lord have
what?
Mercy with this dog.
Like, honestly, I don't think, like, other people just can't understand when I say she's lippy.
She needs a GoPro because she literally talks back to us.
She talks back to you.
She cuts us off. The other day, we were literally talking to her and she cut me off from disciplining her with one of these.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't even finish my sentence, Beatrice. Thanks.
She does this like, I'm trying to see if I could describe it physically. It's kind of like what an old person would do, like,
yeah.
Like they're kind of like,
she's blustery. Everything's a bluster.
Like her lips kind of pop.
Like, how dare we interrupt whatever she
and
was
the,
doing?
This sound, well, because she doesn't really, she's beagly, right?
Yeah,
so
she's
got
mostly beagle.
She's got jowls.
Yeah.
And I've never seen her. She cannot bare her teeth. No. Like if she growls, it's like a throat. Like her you don't see her teeth at all. No. Like her lips stay closed. Like, like that's her. Like I'm agitated.
Yeah.
But so this lippy thing is only for you and me.
Yeah, she
nobody
doesn't
else
do it
gets
to
it.
Anybody else.
Yeah, it's just interacting with you. And I really think the purpose is like indignation.
It is. She's when like, she wants to go out, we're not responding quick enough. Or you know, it used to be too when you tell her, you know, be patient, and you'd say like, wait, you know, 2 minutes, and it used to get you like 15. Now it gets you like 2. That's straight up. She's like, I tell time now, bitch. Your 2 minutes is up.
And not only that, but the feeding thing, right? Like, again, she's got like a clock and a stomach and she gets indignant. But it used to be maybe like a half hour before the dinner time. She'd get kind of like puffy and pushy with her head and kind of podgy and stuff. Now it's like fucking 2 hours before dinner.
No, I thought she was usually, and I still think this. I mean, she does whatever she does, but she usually doesn't start getting crazy until it actually is dinner time.
No,
but we were feeding her at 8:30, and she's like, it was like scary clockwork.
It was. She used to be, but so she's getting lunch earlier and dinner earlier, and nevertheless, she does the thing where she'll sit by her food bowl and she'll look at you and get direct line of sight from the TV room. So you're watching TV, and you look over to the side, and there's the fucking dog just staring at you. And then she'll fucking like sit down, and she'll get a little bit more like her eyes look a little bit more insistent. Then she'll fucking lay down with a like a again, just all kind of indignant. And then you look over, and she literally will sigh.
Like, so dramatic.
Are you fucking kidding me, dude? Like, damn, dog. Damn. But speaking of, I shouldn't say white woman because I don't know this individual's white, but I really have to assume. Like, the data points of interaction I've had with this woman from my day job. I don't want to, like, tell folks what I do's, but on occasion, we have users of our site that I interact with, sometimes in a really significant way, but usually when it's on the telephone or like my direct email versus like the support system that we have, right? When it's my telephone or direct email, like they've gotten a hold of me, like, I don't say inappropriately, but kind of inappropriate.
Yeah, like they shouldn't be getting
like I usually give somebody my phone number, like it, and like I say it's a phone number, it's like direct to me, like my computer rings, then my cell phone rings, like it's like, you know, like I don't want every Tom, Dick, and Harry calling me on this shit. So I get a voicemail. Like, and first of all, I can see it. Like, it comes in, I hear the computer ring, and then I'm upstairs, I'm done with work, it's like 7 o'clock at night or something. I check my phone, and I can see that it's, you know, somebody calling that I don't know, and it's like, whatever, whatever. So I just ignore it. I'm like, fuck it, send a voicemail. Don't even think another thing about it. I come down the next morning, and there's like 4 support tickets that have been signed to me. Like, you get a little like email, like, you know, please help on ticket number, blah, 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 blah. I've got like 1 or 2 other emails, and I've got this voicemail. So I play the voicemail, and it was like, and I wish I could find it. I couldn't find the file because it would have been brilliant to play, but like, they literally were very calm, but the tenor of the voicemail was like, it's 5:35 on the Pacific Coast, and this is who I am, and I need you to call me immediately. Please, this is urgent. Immediately. I said the word immediately like twice. I was like, wow, you know, geez Louise. But the way they said like 5:45 on the West Coast, there was some sort of like, And there was something else they said that was sort of like, I'm shocked you're not open. Right. Like, why aren't you working at the same time that I work? How dare you? How dare you, despite 2/3 of your business being in Europe? Why are you not up on the West Coast? My God. So then I start looking at the support tickets, and I'm like, oh, geez. You
know. And half the company not being in the United States at all. But
oh, yeah, whatever. So I'm going through the support tickets. I'm like, oh, my Lord, Jesus Christ, this is crazy. And it's like, I don't call it like nonsense, but it's definitely getting like garbly gookity. Like it's just, and we save some of these things. Like we have a 3-ring binder we print up with some of the like most ridiculous shit people send us. Like my favorite is the one dude who ranted and yelled at a bunch of individuals. And then in the apology, like for this week apologies, I'm sorry, I'm a bipolar alcoholic and I've been off my meds. Like that's the start of
it. My favorite's the one that claimed that you like,
stole her thoughts. Stole her thoughts. Oh, awesome. Thought we were witchcraft and stole her thoughts. And every time someone came, we owed her a penny. Anyway, so this person, and I didn't put them all together. I have all these support tickets. I've got this bizarre email. I've got this crazy voicemail. I forward something to MK. I don't want to say the names. And she's like, oh my fucking God, you're dealing with this person? So am I. They've been calling the office all week. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I didn't even tell you this part. Like, it is the most like Byzantine bizarre stuff, but there was apparently like, I guess somebody was selling something that they were telling people was membership to our site, but it wasn't. And she bought it and got scammed.
Oh, so she was upset because she thought she should have.
And okay. I guess, I don't know what you bought and what you thought you were buying, but like, it wasn't for me, you know? But it was just kind of, it was crazy. And like, she responded to every fucking email, marketing emails. Why are you sending me this? And was confusing us with the client that sent the email. It just was like, geez Louise, lady. It just went on and on. It was way too many things. It was like, I finally had to block her. I was like, this, you can't call me anymore. I got to turn this off. Done.
Bye.
Bye. Speaking of not so crazy, I know I've told you about my UFO sighting and I don't say I like talked about it, but it, for me, seeing what I could not identify and the movement that this thing did, I can't reconcile what I actually saw and all of us there saw with what I think I know about reality in terms of like, you know, extraterrestrials, UFOs, like moving things in the sky. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it was a very bright light and it traveled in one direction from very far distance at a great speed, you know, like far greater than anything I've ever seen, like a shooting star speed, stopped, pivoted, and went entirely the opposite direction, like 90 degrees. Like, that's just not, you know, shooting stars don't do that. Like, I don't know what this was, but that was really fucking weird. And we all saw it. Sure. And we talked about it, and I thought, oh, there's a... So we're up at Smooth Mustache's cottage, and one of the people that was in the car with us that day, we'll just call him...
David.
Yeah, David, who lives with his mom.
That's why I said David.
David tells me that there's a website that chronicles like UFO sightings. Mm-hmm. And this is literally like there's a lot of people are talking about this. It's a case, UFO case.
Oh, book. There's a case.
It's called the Holland, Michigan sighting of 1994.
What?
There's 911 tapes. Like 35 different people called into 911.
Wow.
There was like a military or weather base that saw it.
Renee Murphy and her husband of Ada Township observed a huge shape for about 2 minutes as it flew slowly about 100 feet over the woods over their home. It had four lights, she said, and it made a soft whirring noise. It sounded like a single jet engine. That it continued for several days, ending on the 10th. The sightings were never adequately explained.
Yeah, like I said, all of us saw it. We all saw it. And then there was this weird moment of like, kind of like silence, but like not really. And I don't know who spoke first, but it was like, did you see that? Like, yeah, what the fuck was that? Like, I don't know, man. That was really fucking weird. But, you know, I don't know. I don't have any, there's nothing else to add to it other than that I've had this. We had this experience, and I've mentioned it and talked to other people. I haven't been like, oh, I saw a UFO, but kind of feel like I did. And now there's a little bit of, you know, I don't want you to call it empirical, but other people saw it too. That doesn't mean it was a UFO, but it means that I'm not I'm not as batshit crazy as we all hope.
We'll see. Anyways, well, I'll say, obviously, you saw something. You all saw something. You were together. I wouldn't go so far as to assume it was a UFO, but I get that. You know, seeing something unusual that moves in a weird way is whatever.
And I hear you. I'm not, like I said, I'm not prepared to be like, it was fucking Martians and E.T. and extraterrestrial life.
And they probed me.
Yeah, no, but I, you know, I and just a very, you know me, I'm a practical, pragmatic, kind of empiricist driven person. I can't reconcile what I saw with my known, with I think the universe's known understanding of vehicles in trajectory.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because you're an atheist. So God, E.T., yes. Got it.
Well, and listen, all right, well, full disclosure, I'll be fair on the atheist. Sometimes I think it's more agnostic than atheist. Mm-hmm. But I've had experiences that I can't fully reconcile with my known or the world's known understanding of, different interactions and behaviors. The things that it's like, there's just way too many to say this is coincidental.
Yeah, like the other day when everything Reggie and Nick Jew said to me just popped up everywhere.
Sure.
On our TV, in emails, weird.
And, you know, our life, our relationship, things that we've had.
Could just be Google, though.
I don't chalk that up to coincidence. The biggest one is you and I, when we have a certain experiences that we share they're very powerful
experiences. Now people are gonna think we're the fucking weirdos. No, what are you talking about?
Like when you're doing like quasi tantric stuff, I like to
meditative states and stuff. But I think that's explainable,
for me I identify that with a higher state of consciousness and being, and maybe that which some people call God, right? So that's one experience. And in a similar matter, again, just this sort of like focused energy and being, I've had Reiki and other sort of treatments were like, whoa, that blew me away. Like, I can't explain that.
Right.
But the, when our minister got called service.
Jennifer,
and they did a literal laying of hands. And I remember reading it and like, laying of hands, that sounds like all Christian and biblically and weird. And, I'm not into this, be gone with you, laying of hands kind of stuff. But so they got her in the middle, her immediate family and pastors and people that were calling her around her, all putting a hand on her shoulder. And then the entire congregation of hundreds and hundreds of people, each holding a hand on another person's hand on shoulder, all of that focused on this individual, right. Jennifer. And, fuck you. You weren't moved. Like there was
I feel it.
I don't know what it was.
Oh,
an energy, a pulse.
For
an electricity.
And it was moving.
Yeah.
That was the thing about it. I've been in rooms where you feel stuff. And I've been in movement spaces where you feel something. But this was really
powerful.
It was really like you could feel it just going towards her.
And maybe there's an explanation. There's a small electrical field that humans have, and there's some conductivity and there's energy, and like you could explain it, or just that which some may call God,
maybe
power of love, light, whatever. But it was, so I've had experiences like that in the same sense. But you're right with the UFO. It was just one and done. It was very concrete. Like, nope, done. UFOs are there. They're real. I believe it. Yep.
ET's What's real. Funny to me is whenever you encounter somebody who's also had a UFO sighting, and they're always like, you go into like this full geek mode. Like, what?
Here's the thing.
Seriously. He's like, no, I'm serious. I'm serious.
You got the SETI app? Did you download the SETI app?
It's funny to me. Anyway.
Well, I think the other thing for, when I'm engaging with folks about that, like I'm definitely not the media would have you believe the typical UFO sighting person is like the yokel local, like they come down and the cow blewed up. Like, I'm not like that. So maybe they don't expect me to be as, I don't want to say like resigned is the right word, but so clear in my acceptance that there is most likely extraterrestrial life. Like I'm okay with that.
Gotcha. So I spoke a couple weeks ago in Chicago.
You did.
At National Lewis University.
And I told you, but I'll tell the genres. Mm. You fucking slayed it. I was so like that. I've felt this way before, and it's kind of like, I don't mean to sound weird, but like proud. I really was just watching up there.
That's
like,
so sweet.
You just killed it. You led it. It was so good. There have been so many sessions. In fact, that day, I went to three other sessions. Mm. Yours was the by far the most complete and had the most information, the most interaction, the most the facilitator led us from a point to another point,
right.
And then some takeaways. There's other ones that were just sort of like, oh, here's my story.
But right.
It's still, I thought you killed it. It was
really
thanks. Good.
I appreciate that. It was good. I think I'm going to flesh out that presentation or that workshop a little bit more and make it a little bit larger.
You should.
But anyways, that's neither here nor there.
It could be the base of that other conversation.
Well, that's what I'm going to try and get into right now. All right. So we're on the way home from the weekend. We had gone to see your mom and we, you know, whatever. Got to get some good food. We saw my college roommate and her baby, which was awesome. So it was a great weekend all in all. We were on the way home and we had started having kind of a discussion about how did it start? Because I don't remember.
In fact, I remember exactly. And maybe it's interesting that I remember it more than you do. So we were having a discussion about maybe something we don't need to talk about, but there was a point within where my thought process on this thing was very, and I'm driving, so I'm really kind of like, it's hard to focus and stuff. Like my mind is kind of like going the miles. Yeah, it's just running and running and running. And I was taking an approach that was really sort of like, let me spitball and throw all this stuff at the wall and kind of see what sticks. And you're sort of saying like, no, that doesn't work. Like, okay, this might work. That kind of works. No, this doesn't work. And I was asking you for clarity on how you were making that decision. Like I was, in my mind, what I was looking for was, what are the parameters with which you're using to decide so I can better make better suggestions, right? And you, at the time, not that you were reluctant, but I was kind of irritating. I was kind of pushing. You were getting a little bit agitated. And we ultimately realized there was, A, a little bit of a communication issue in the moment. But what I was looking for, you had been saying to me for, not weeks, but we've had remnants of this conversation many, many, many times. Mm. And in short, I would say your mantra has been, you know, for you as a white person, the work is in doing the work.
Right.
It's not, you know, it's like this, I hate to use a cliche, but like, you know, the road, not the destination is what matters, but it's really not just the road. It's like, you know, how you plan to get there. Did you use a map? Did you do this? Did you, you know, take care of your car? Is the tires inflated? Did you stop here to visit this person, that person? So all the things that we do within this space, as in a movement space, action, whatever. And this was like that. This, you know, I won't say what we were talking about, but
right,
there was something that was like, okay,
we were talking about, yeah,
like movement stuff. Movement, I was like, you know, stuff. What about mm-hmm. that? And I was really trying to get a very, you know, almost like a white male approach to solve this problem, right? Like, you know, okay, you've declined this one on what parameter? Check. This is no longer acceptable. What about this one? Okay, check. This, you know, almost like a machine would learn things like by trial and error until like these are the things that kind of work. And that, you know, in reality, that is a shortcut. That's not going to be successful in terms of movement space. You need to be more intentioned in yep. your thinking. You need to be more aware and present in terms of why you're doing this and who you're doing it for and what the optics are and what the purpose is and all kinds of stuff. And when you do all those things, the action either works or doesn't work, but it's going to be, you know, the outcome is going to be received in a positive light, right? But if you don't do some of those things, you get to the outcome, there's likely going to be pretty obvious you missed a step. There's going to yep. be some critique. And for us white people, especially if we got like 90% of it right, but we didn't have that one piece, when someone critiques the one piece, we can crumble. We can get really fragile. I've seen some, you know, quote unquote white allies that have left Facebook and just like, you know, and they had, I thought, you know, good intentions, laudable intentions. And if they had just said, oh, geez, you're right, help me understand, they could have come back very different. Instead, they got defensive and, oh, you're shitting on my amazing plan. It's like, no, I'm not. I'm shitting on the fact that you failed the 10% of this great plan. You're right. 90% was good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're having this discussion, and it was hard for me in that in order to get to this point for me at that moment, it ended up like kind of like, I don't want to say like abusing you because that's the wrong word, but right. like, you know, like how fucked up, like I've talked about learning and how people learn and this and that. And is it the smack on the nose or is it the, you know, gentle kid gloves?
Right.
For me in this moment, I was physically, I didn't have the tools. I was incapable of having a learning adjustment in incorporating this understanding in a deep way.
Mm-hmm.
Without in some way making it hard on you.
Right.
And it's like, fucking A, man, even as a white, I can't even, you know, I say I want to do less harm. And like, man, in order to get to this point, I had to do harm to black woman I love.
Right. And I said to you at the time, what I said to you was that's why I don't work with white people, because that's where it always has to go. It always has to go to a place of agitation or upset or conflict, right, in order for them to actually get anything. And half the time, even with all that, they don't get it. So it becomes even more like, what the fuck is the point of it? So I really, like, I don't engage, because it's really not useful and doesn't really do anything to help.
Yeah.
So anyways, I thought it was a good breakthrough, because I feel like I have been kind of talking to you about, like, the importance of the work and, like, what the work means. And what I think the moment that it clicked is because your response to me was that you're in the car and this was the easiest way for you to do that right now.
Yeah. Right. It sounds like a machine trying to just.
Right. Boop, 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 boop.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's the work. Like, when I look dead at you, I'm like, but right there, you thinking that's an excuse or reason to not actually do it. That's the problem with white people. They don't, they always have a reason why they don't have to go through the motions that we tell them is what the work actually is. It's always like, well, I'll do it after. I'll consider black people at the end. I'll go backwards and do it. And it just doesn't work that way. And I was trying to articulate myself well. I actually had an interaction with Rachel on Twitter earlier this week about it, just because we had had the conversation and I had talked with, I think, Jonathan Stengel as well about it on Twitter. And so those are both white people that I interact with on these subjects, because I've done work with them in the past, and they have a really great perspective, both as white people and also people in movement spaces. So it's always nice to talk with them about this stuff, because, as I said, I don't really talk to white people about it very much. And what I said to Rachel was that I have been trying to articulate this really for white people to get. And what I've come up with is that where white people, they approach anti-racism as like a puzzle that has to be solved.
You're right on.
And with that approach, they miss a ton. So because they're focused specifically on getting somewhere, right? And that downplays all the work that they actually have, that has to actually be done internally with them as a person, and then together with whoever they're working with. So if all you're focused on is where we're going, then all that kind of downplays that middle part of what you're doing to get there.
And that also explains why when leadership, so there's a dynamic where white folk are kind of like, I don't know what we'd call it, but like parroting. They're kind of saying the right things and doing the right things. And I went through that. I was like, okay, I know enough to shut up and fucking just follow them. But so when those plans change, you know, like, oh, we were going to go left and now we're going to go right. A lot of white people, well, we're ready to go left. Why are we going right now? And it's just, it's because of what you said, that the puzzle's not, you know, the same. And you know, with with me in the car, I don't think it was more, and I'm not trying to like, acquiesce, right? I did what I did, but I don't think it was like it wasn't like the biggest hurt in the world. It was just you and me,
right?
But for me, it wasn't like I'm actually trying to cut corners.
No,
it was I wasn't thinking about what you had said and how important that is at every step.
Right.
So when it came to the, like you said, the puzzle, it was like, well, I'm driving, I'm doing like, what would be the easiest for me right now? Just to kind of fucking throw shit out and just see what Leslie says. But like, well, that's, you know, without even thinking, that's work on you.
Right.
Now I'm asking you, a black woman, to like do this work. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like it was a microcosm of the, well, we've done all this stuff and we talked to one black person who said it was cool. So we're going to go ahead and do it. Right. We're accountable to this one black person. So we're good regardless of how fuck ass shit our thing is. So it was kind of like a little bit like that. I was using you in that role. But it was, I would say if we had stopped the conversation in the car and we came back to it, I wouldn't have been in the same mentality or modality.
Mm.
And if you had described what the issue was and what we were having in the car and talk and all this, if you had said everything that you said in the car in the same verbatim, but like 2 hours later sitting on the couch, I honestly think I would have, like, not that I would have like deliberately olayed it like one ear out the other, but I probably would have like thought that I understood it, but I really wouldn't have, I don't think, without having the experience there, right there with you. And then part of that was knowing that I had kind of like, not caused you harm, but like, you know, I did. Like, you were uncomfortable. You weren't happy. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't like I laid hands. I wouldn't raise my voice. No. It wasn't even like that. Like in the grand scheme of things in our 20 years, like,
right.
We've had like 100 much worse interactions.
Yeah.
But this, I,
but it was like me being like, I can't talk about that right now. And you'd be like, nope, we're going to talk about it. And
yeah.
I was like, okay, white dude, like, take it down a notch, because I already said I didn't want to talk about this. And yeah, but I also think that when I was talking to Rachel, the other thing I was pointing out to her was that this is not, you know, the only way to honestly value Black lives the way you do your own is to actually do it, right? Actually do it.
Yeah.
Right? And then do it again, and then continue doing it, and then do it till it's a habit, and then do it till that's what you do. And my other point to her was that this is, to me, that act, what I just described, is what was so special about Ferguson. It's why it resonated with us. It's why it sparked this huge movement towards Black liberation. It's because what we were literally watching in front of us was them making the value of Black lives a habit for them as a community. Black people have been killed in Ferguson and in St. Louis forever. But that day and that death, they decided they were not going to do it anymore. And so for hundreds of days afterwards, they continued to go out because that was the habit they had decided to set for themselves as a community and as a protest family, that they were speaking out for this person and for themselves as community members.
Yeah.
So it's not as though Black people don't have to do these same exercises. It just, because whiteness is used to being acquiesced to, it's really hard to get white people to see the value in that, because they always assume that they have a better way of doing things. So when you tell them something very simple, that no, this is how we are doing it, and this is how the work, this is where you find the value in it.
Yeah.
They have no concept of seeing it.
It's not that it's not wanted or desired. It's really, and I'm trying to understand how to describe it. It's the thing that you're talking about. So there's two thoughts. One, you said this, you know, make it a habit, do it again and again and again. I don't know who wrote it. It might have been Mia McKenzie, Black Girl Danger, Dangers, about allyship in the form of a verb. Mm-hmm. She's cool with it. But as a noun, like, no, fuck that shit. Like, anyone who says, like, I'm a Black Lives Matter ally as a white person, like, nope, you immediately calling yourself an ally, you've just fucked up and you're not at all. But so the comment they made was that allyship as a verb is action, and you've got it's like a bank account that starts on zero every fucking day.
Right.
You fill up that account, and at the end of the day, you've done actions that were in alignment and solidarity and allyship, or you didn't. And the next day, your account's back to zero. You got to do it every fucking day. There is no, like, I did this yesterday. That doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's what you do today. And I think that goes in alignment with what you were saying. But again, I don't think of it so much as like, we know better. You're right. You know, of all the white people, there are Venn diagrams of competing like variables. And absolutely, we think we know better. We think we're needed and important. We think no one's thought about this. You know, all these kind of things are competing at the same time. But for me specifically, I shouldn't say white people, but for me specifically, the stumbling block in this regard wasn't an understanding of the process and where the process needed to be. It was seeing how it broke, how failing to do so ended up breaking down, you know, and making it uncomfortable for you, and not wanting to do that and be like, oh shit, how'd that happen? What? Okay. I get it now. Like, it was, again, I can't understand. I can't exactly explain it.
Right. But to me, like, that loses the lesson, because it makes it so specific to me. Right. Because if you had just done that to some stranger in a store or in some other context, you wouldn't feel it the same way. But I'm your wife. You love me. No, and I'm sitting there.
You explained it, because the same thing with the massage. When I made the comment about the woman's clothes on Jeopardy, and we had that, you know, not similar, but another conversation, it wasn't that I hurt you, but you were saying it, so I kind of like it clicked a little bit better.
Right.
I think more it's like, you know, even here's what it really is. This is, as a white person, what you are asking us to do, mm-hmm, is to be cognitive and conscious of Black humanity.
Yep.
And our impact and emotional, you know, physical and other impact on Black people generally in and around us at any moment.
Yeah.
That as an activity, just if that's like a muscle, right? Think of that as a muscle.
It is a muscle.
Black people do that all the fucking time.
Yeah, we have to.
You walk into a room and it's like instantly, what am I, what are white people going to think of and perceive my actions? Yep. And how am I going to be thought of? You know, am I the angry black woman? What's going to happen? White people never have to do that.
No.
In addition, so like that, the muscles atrophied a little bit because we don't ever have to work it out. And then the part of that muscle is, there's an emotional component. It's a desire and an ability to see black people as human and to have empathy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know that anti-black bias and anti-black conditioning and white supremacy, it specifically, you know, like neuters those things.
Yep.
So now this muscle is not only atrophied, but now it's fucking like, you know, it's totally cut off. And so I think of, I'll just say again, for me, as I've had different sort of like understandings and lessons, like, okay, you know, the colorblindness, that's no good. And like, as you start to kind of learn and educate yourself, it didn't come quickly. Like, I'll be honest, I still, when like, you know, I'm still 43 and I've been in this country for this many years. When the word criminal is written and said, like, there's a like damn near Pavlovian response that it's like almost thinks black. Like, that's just like, as a white person, these are like things that have been beat into me, conditioned, indoctrinated. And what we're talking about is it's going 180 degrees against all that fucking horse shit. And so other instances, like I'm trying to think of another example, but there are other things where I've had this kind of breakthrough and it didn't stop me from having the thoughts or behavior. It allowed me to name it and recognize it and name it and recognize that it is bad.
Right.
And then train myself when I have that thought to kind of like tamp it down.
Right.
And white fragility is just like that. Like I still get defensive and upset and worried, but like I now I'm like, oh, that's fucking worthless and it's white fragility and that's not productive. And like, you know what I mean? Like I'm able to kind of like not respond and react. It doesn't debilitate me. But, you know, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, I'd be like, oh no, that's not me. I would've been a very white, fragile, defensive guy.
Mm.
So in the same sense, like I think, okay, I you know, this happened. We had this interaction. It wasn't perfect, whatever. I have this understanding that's different for me. I don't know how to impart. You're right. I can't generalize that for other people. But now that I've had it, I don't think I'm going to go from here to perfection. I think I'm still going to not think of these things in the right step and stages. But I hope now that I can name it, I can rectify that sooner, you know?
Yeah.
And immediately the outcome I want is to not put you in an uncomfortable position.
Right.
Like if we do that, like, okay, it's one step further. I'm doing less harm.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing that I would say about the conversation, and I know we'll continue talking about this, potentially moving forward into something more formal, but you know, the big thing I really hope people listen to, especially white folks listening, or actually only white folks listening, is that there is, a false equivalency between this idea of getting somewhere through movement spaces and movement work versus working to change how you are in the world, right?
And so you meaning like advancement?
Meaning, okay, let's say you were going to plan an action, right? For in a city, in to address an issue, whatever. There is the desired outcome of the action itself, so what you're trying to do with the action, and then all of the stuff that goes from you deciding you want to do something to it actually, you know, the end of whatever it is, the terminus of it. Everything that happens in the middle of that, yes, it's meant to serve and to make the action as successful and useful and correct and in alignment and accountable and all of those things that we need direct action and civil disobedience to be. But the actual act of doing it is not about necessarily the outcome of the action.
Right.
That's the training part. That's all of the stuff that you have to do, all the things you have to consider, all the conversations you have to have, all the ways you have to, you know, take this thing and turn it around and talk about it and dissect it and really get down to what in its essence are you trying to do and what's the best way to accomplish it in the spirit that you want to. That whole part, that's how you change how you are in the world. Because in the act of saying, oh, you know, how is this going to be perceived if black people see this optic, or if the audience that we're doing this in front of sees this optic, what does that say? The act of you doing that allows you in every situation you walk into to now be thinking, what are the optics of this?
Yeah.
What are the optics of me taking this mic away from this person of color? What are the optics of me interrupting this person in this meeting? All of those things change how you are in the world.
You know what it feels like? And this sounds corny, but it feels like having a really good mission statement. You know, like as a business at every stage for our business, we have a probably one of the best mission statements I've ever been a part of. And I fall back on it all the fucking time. Mm-hmm. Really, what does the mission mean? And what am I doing at this moment? And how does that relate to the mission? If the mission is, you know, thinking of black folk and humanity and, you know, I don't know what we're calling this, but intention thinking every time. You know, that's a good mission. It's something you can fall back on. And well, what should I do right here? I'm not sure. Let me think. Not let me go ask somebody. Let me think and work through it and have the tools to get to that, you know, a decision that I'm comfortable with. And again, I think there's this parroting of behavior and words. Like you could really get very far in saying and doing the right things without having, you know, kind of the aha moment, without doing the internal work you're talking about.
Yeah, because what you're able to do is to get to a point where, you know, this idea, one concept I've seen this with is like centering blackness, right? In movement spaces and making sure that you're centering blackness, which I think white people have taken in a really like almost skewed way. I think when black people say centering blackness, because we're black, we're talking about centering ourselves. And it's a form of self-care and self-actualization in a way that we have to be in the world differently. But when we're talking about white people and that concept of centering blackness, it's not about centering black people, or I should say it's not just about decentering whiteness, which is what we have to do as black people. What it is for white is that white people need to work to create a culture that accommodates blackness. Okay. Those are not the same thing, and you're not going to be doing the same things to accomplish them.
Yeah, and I'll tell you straight up, my you know, I'm not at that level, right? When I think of here's a space and how am I going to center blackness, all I can think of is decenter my whiteness.
Right.
You're absolutely right. That's a really good analogy. It's a very different space.
When it is. I told you that the stuff we were talking about and this stuff I'm talking about right now, I literally probably think there's three white people that I feel that's where they are, that they truly like they have gotten to the point and they are incredibly active. They work for amazing organizations or with amazing organizations and are hands fucking on with black people in black spaces. So they really understand the difference between decentering whiteness and changing to make sure that blackness is accommodated.
And this goes right into the heart of I have seen with my own eyes, heard with my own ears, white individuals at, you know, kind of traditional hierarchical organizations that do work with black people, like a lot of work. Like they're in black communities doing work, and white individuals at these entities fucking just don't know how to talk to black people. No. They don't know how to engage and interact with black people. They don't know how to have a simple engagement and conversation, whether it's email, text, or face-to-face, that literally does what we just said, accommodates blackness.
Yeah, because there's this idea that what makes you as a white person feel accommodated is sufficient for black people. And that is exactly what that is you have this concept of what is sufficient. And when a black person's in the space, that's not going to be sufficient for them. And then you come up to this concept where people will say like, well, what do they want us to do? We've done everything that we did for everybody else. And it's like, that's great. But what you did didn't take me into account. So it's fucking irrelevant to me. So
here's the other thing we haven't said that I think, in hindsight, the thing that we were working on, now that I'm thinking of it differently, I look at all the things I had suggested. I'm like, of course that was fuck ass crazy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, of course that in hindsight it sounds bizarre and stupid. But what I mean to say is that if this work is being done properly, it's pretty clear. If it's not done, it's even more clear.
Yeah.
You know, like if you did it right, it's like, all right, you did it right. But when you fucking fail and miss a step, it's like glaring. You know what I mean? At least I think for black people, it's glaring. It has to be.
Yeah. I mean, it is glaring. I say that to you all the time. I'm like, this is some fuck shit. But which again is why I don't work with white people in the work that I try and do. I just don't find it to be productive. But I will say that I found these conversations that you and I have to be productive. And I think there could be a way for me to do a, like a drop of work with white people in this particular area of trying to move them along.
And I don't want you to just we haven't fleshed it out or don't say anything, but right. I think what you had when I had said there's one other concern I have, and when you said your last piece that I think you know that to me is the linchpin. I think you could do something.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like I said, I was like I'm thinking about it, but in the thinking about it, like the conditions have to be so specific, and so you know, like I said, very specific for me for it to be worth my time.
Yeah, your time's valuable.
So
valuable.
Yeah,
have we been podcasting for an
it's
hour?
It's been an hour, just so you know.
It's only been an hour.
Speaking of not accommodating blackness,
So poverty has the same effect on the brain as constantly pulling all nighters. New study shows, which I guess doesn't really surprise me. But so the effects of poverty, they say, can have an impact by as much as 13% on a person's IQ. I'm having to think about living in these conditions of poverty. So it's a new study. Study authors, Harvard economist Sandhill Mulhattan, told the Washington Post, poverty is the equivalent of pulling an all nighter. Picture yourself after an all nighter. Being poor is like that every day.
That sucks. Yeah. And then the question, why don't they just pull themselves up by their bootstraps?
That's just the IQ. Talk about like negative stress impact. Like poverty has a huge impact on your, you know, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Your environment, where you're living, food deserts, all kinds of shit.
So many things.
And just the, you know, all that combined. And I think we talked to John at another point that, another time that being black in a white supremacist society, likewise, has a deleterious impact on an individual's ability to process and compute and quote unquote, you know, IQ. Doesn't mean black people are dumber. It means that they have to work a lot fucking harder. There's a portion of their brain that's got to be attenuated to, you know, staying alive in a white supremacist society, literally, you know what I mean? And so now imagine being black and poor, which, you know, of course those two intersect drastically. So it's a double whammy. It kind of, like I said, it didn't surprise me, but it's, I guess the size of the impact, 13%, that's big. That's huge.
Yeah. Some of the things they mentioned was that chronic stress of growing up in poverty has been found to impair children's brains, particularly in working memory. A study of veterans found that poverty is a bigger risk factor for mental illness than being exposed to warfare. Are you guys hearing that shit? Fucking warfare. And the mental stress of being poor is also a major reason why low-income people tend to have negative health outcomes like high blood pressure and cholesterol or elevated rates of obesity and diabetes. And it reminds me of that that article that was like, it's really expensive being poor or something like that. Do you remember that? I do. And this is along those same lines where it's like, you know, you don't even understand the situations that you have to put yourself in when you truly are unable to make ends meet this, you know, really basal way.
I said in the mail, I got just an astronomical amount of debt kind of stuff. Like people are trying to give me money and I was like, wow, this is weird. Oh, we paid off the car.
Right. You know, the car is paid off now they want to give us more money.
We're less poor.
Of course.
Not that we're anywhere close to poor, but they fucking come out of the woodwork.
Right. So, in lighter news, an octopus slipped out of an aquarium tank, crawls across the floor, escapes down a pipe to the goddamn ocean. His name's Inky. Inky the octopus. He didn't even try to cover his tracks, by the way, people, because he's a gangster like that. By the time the staff at New Zealand's National Aquarium noticed he was missing, telltale suction cup prints were the main clue to an easily solved mystery. Inky had said, see it to his tank mate, slipped through a gap left by maintenance workers at the top of his enclosure, and as evidenced by the tracks, made his way across the floor to a 6-inch wide drain. He squeezed his football sized body in. Octopuses are very malleable, and then he made a break for the fucking Pacific Ocean. He managed to make his way to one of the drains that go back to the ocean, and off he went. He didn't even leave us a message. I said when I saw this, clearly he's a black octopus, because that's some black people shit if I ever heard of it. Yeah.
Mission Impossible, dude.
Inky.
Do you think he smelled the ocean?
Like probably.
He went with a purpose. He knew where he was going. Like he didn't like dig around here and go back and forth. Like he went straight pipe.
Yeah.
ocean.
Yeah, he's been there since 2014, where he was taken in after being caught in a crayfish pot. His body was scarred and his arm was injured, and they ran a contest to name him. The aquarium's curator said at the time that Inky was getting used to being at the aquarium, but that staff would have to keep him amused or he will get bored.
They're smart, those mm-hmm. octopi.
And so,
cephalopods.
Yeah, and apparently this isn't the first time that captive octopi have taken matters into their own hands. In 2009, after a two-spotted octopus in the Santa Monica Pier Aquarium in California took apart a water recycling valve, directed
that.
A tube to shoot water out of the tank for 10 hours and caused a massive fucking flood.
I remember that, dude.
Don't fuck with these octopi. They'll get
That's
you.
That's crazy.
Awesome. Well, good on you, Inky. Hope you have a wonderful life out in the ocean. Good.
Nice.
Hope everything goes well for you. You don't get stuck in anymore.
Speaking of oceans, the new RSS Bodie McBoatface is getting ready to be christened and launched. What's weirder still is
RSS is in like a boat, like for the Army or the Navy. I mean,
oh yeah, it's a $300 million research vessel for the British. The NERC, the Natural Environmental Research Council. Literally.
What?
So this came
Our
up
coffee
on
shop is a place for
is that me?
No, it's me.
This came up maybe about like 2-3 weeks ago. I saw that Bodie McBoatface was leading in the polls and I put it on our podcast notes. I'm like, I'm not gonna bother with it. And then Bodie McBoatface won. So
oh
like, well maybe
goodness.
I have to actually but so it's kind of like a Rick Rolling, like a 4chan troll, but not totally. So the internet the RSS naming rights. They had a contest named submissions. They had like 7,000 submissions, and you know the British explorer that died trying to cross the Antarctic. I think last year his name was in there.
Okay,
but somebody
I thought there was like a girl that was like dying from cancer.
Yeah, there's a couple of 7,000 names.
Some heart spring.
Some good
ones,
names.
Yeah.
But somebody put 7, in names. Bodie McBoatface, and that just kind of has a nice little ring to it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And it cut off, and it won by a landslide. 125,000 votes.
Wow.
So, but they do, the fine print says that the NERC does reserve the final name. And it was James Hand had put in the name, Bodie McBoatface. But the NERC may not name it, but I think they are going to name it Bodie McBoatface. And it's been kind of like a comedy bit in the UK. There was a train, and you have the little scrolling bar.
Uh-huh.
And they renamed it Trainy McTrainface. And a grocery store has a new type of cheese, Cheesy McCheeseface. And
Cheesy McCheese face.
Yeah, Johnny Johnny McJohn face.
Penguin McPenguin face. I saw that at the Chester Zoo. That's really hilarious.
Bodie
well,
McBoat face.
What are you going to do?
It's got, I like it. Bodie McBoat face. Good on you, James.
And
if the NERC goes through with it and names it Bodie McBoat face, I'll be impressed.
Will you now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
I still don't have good music for the hashtags.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama.
Well, the only hashtag you need to know this motherfucking week is lemonade, bitches.
And that ain't no fucking punk-ass U2 album.
No, it is
Boom.
Not. The queen herself, Beyonce, has announced that this coming Sunday? Saturday night. Yeah, Saturday night. She is going to be launching something called Lemonade on HBO, Saturday night, April 23rd. I should mention this coincides directly with HBO's free week of programming, which started yesterday.
All y'all can
see this. And she announced it on Twitter, of course.
And we don't know if it's a concert,
we
video,
don't know what the fuck it is.
Just Lemonade HBO.
Just Lemonade HBO.
Is it an hour or 2 hours?
I don't even know. We'll probably have to look at the info. Just at what time it started. And they had a longer, teaser for it. And it had a lot of scenes in it. It looked real gully. There's one where she, attacks New Orleans police department security system. And I mean, they were just the quick shots, but it's going to be interesting. I hope it's more than a video. It would be great, man, if it was a whole album, but we'll see.
Fucking white people were in their fields with formation and the stand on the police car. This is just going to.
Baby, listen.
Get ready. White nonsense.
What was really funny was, of course, everybody's reactions to it on the Twitters were really funny. Christian Zamora said, I'm glad I still have my ex-boyfriend's co-worker's roommate's dad's HBO Go password. Hashtag lemonade. Hilarious. You guys, this is Tamara underscore Nickel. She says, you guys, is lemonade a song or what? She's telling us to drink this summer. I honestly don't know.
We'll find out Saturday.
We will know. Jasmine B. Knowing says, Bayhive alert. Certain cable providers are offering HBO free next weekend. Also, HBO Now has free 30-day trials. Retweet to save a life. Hashtag lemonade. Nick Drew herself said, I'm supposed to be going out next Saturday, about to call the restaurant like, y'all got HBO? Hashtag lemonade.
And when's her concert, when's her tour start? When's it kick off?
Starts like next weekend, I'm pretty sure.
She fucking, like, she got this shit laid out fucking just silly fucking smart. Fucking from the Super Bowl, the formation drop before it, the fucking halftime show, the concert, this lemonade bit. She's just unbelievable. Queen of, you know, not queen of, she has more than anyone I've ever seen been able to capitalize on the impact and success she has, leverage it for more gain for her. And I fucking, it's beautiful. Power to her.
It's great. And then the last one was Raquel Willis underscore says, I feel bad for those with major events next Saturday because Beyonce just rescheduled your wedding / birthday / funeral. Hashtag lemonade. So yeah, check that out. Again, that's this Saturday night, 8 p.m. HBO. We don't know what she's doing, but she's gonna do something.
Yeah, and we're gonna have to stay off Twitter. People are gonna be spoiling shit.
Yeah, for sure. We have to stay off Twitter.
Way off of Twitter.
Way. Oh no. Oh yeah, because we are gonna be going to see Fantasia.
Yeah,
Anthony Hamilton. So yeah, we won't be here, but we'll watch when we get back.
It's all good. Yeah. It's all good. So Obama, President Obama, POTUS is going to deliver the commencement address at Howard University.
All right, POTUS.
HBCU.
HBCU, bitches.
I'm just feeling nostalgic for this last year. He's just doing so much awesome stuff.
For sure.
And I'm sure it'll be, we'll all be able to see it and hear it, watch it, but I'm sure it'll be fantastic.
Yes.
He's fucking awesome,
sure,
like that.
It's going to be totally amazing and wonderful. And yeah, there's definitely some lame duck blackness-ish.
Yeah.
In the mix for sure with that.
Yeah, you know, you said don't do it, but he hasn't gone on that show yet. The Fox Sunday show is this Sunday.
He's going on this Sunday.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah. First time President Obama is going to be on Fox Sunday since his, I don't know, election, I guess.
Probably. Or even before. Was he ever on there? I'm interested to know now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's either this week or next week. It's the 20th anniversary of Fox Sunday on the 28th.
Oh.
So what day is that? 28th. Let me get my calendar. So he'll probably be on this Sunday, the 24th.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. We'll definitely see that.
Might be a soundbite or two.
Might be. Some hot takes.
We go from the good to the bad.
It's a GOP clown car.
Yeah, it fucking is. I just feel like it's the Trump clown car these days.
It is, right?
And I saw this, and I don't know if there's a video of it. I think I'll play it, but gosh darn. Here he goes. It's an ad.
He's fucking ad.
I have on my browser, I have the Flash plugin turned off. I have to like right click to get it to play because it slows shit down and takes up too much memory.
Right.
On ABC's page, it won't let you do that because it insists on playing an ad.
Of course it does.
In America that have been more devastated economically by our trade policies than Pittsburgh. We know that. We know what's happened. Don't worry, we're bringing it all back. Don't worry about it, okay? Don't worry. According to the Federal Bureau of Labor, these are just stats. I'm just getting them from the books. According to the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, Pittsburgh has lost one-third of its manufacturing jobs since 2001. One-third.
He's at Penn State, by the way.
Mm-hmm. This happened to be, by the way, the year that China entered the World Trade Organization and started ripping us off, okay?
I've heard all these lines.
From the Pittsburgh Business Times, United States Steel Corp said Wednesday it would be cutting about 25% of its non-unionized workforce, including jobs in Pittsburgh. All over the country, we're getting just devastated. Also, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Pittsburgh also lost 20% of its construction jobs since 2007.
Mm. Anyways, you have to play this whole thing?
Yeah, he's got a stupid company.
And we love the place. You know, we love, just so you understand, I went to school in this state, right? We know that, right? So I know a lot about Pennsylvania, and it's great. How's Joe Paterno? Are we going to bring that back?
You dumbass. He's
Joe Paterno's dead.
Just so stupid. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's literally
He's doing whatever he wants. I think, to me, that's like the long story short with it, is that he's just doing whatever he wants to do, and it's gross. Let's move on.
Okay. White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people,
white people.
One erstwhile white person, Bethany Frankel, gives lesson in how not to empower a room full of women founders.
Yeah, please.
She's the skinny girl, Maven, right?
Is that Bethany? She is, yes. Okay. Mary Pryor, shout out to Mary. She's amazing. You can follow her on Twitter at Mary-Pryor. She was one of the women in the room. Who tried to stand up to a reality star and Skinny Girl founder Bethany Frankel at a women's entrepreneurial summit over the weekend, and she was silenced, I should say. The session wasn't recorded, but it caused a lot of firestorm both in New York City, where the event took place, and on social media. I'll just read some of the firestorm that erupted. For Bethany to insist that a young black female founder, quote, find a white guy to rep her business is a racial microaggression.
Wow. Nice, Bethany.
Mara ML says, great conf. Until Bethany's Q&A, she essentially proposed the erasure of black women as faces of entrepreneurship. To the brave black woman who asks what to do when people tell her to get a white man as the face of her org, I'm sorry for Bethany's answer. Convo with Bethany. Should you do whatever it takes to succeed, like hiring a white male spokesperson as a minority entrepreneur?
Mm-hmm. Who put all these together?
This is just an article on Huffington Post. I'll make them available to everybody.
Oh, I thought maybe there was like a hashtag or something.
Yeah. It's just crazy to me that that's what you would say to somebody who's coming to you for advice as an entrepreneur.
For real.
And that your answer was, yeah.
Go hire a... It sounded a lot like Damon telling a black woman, like, diversity happens,
Behind
the camera.
No. Yeah.
So he said, it was fucked up.
Whatever he said, it was fucked up.
Like, you can say
to
that
to tell a woman in the business, you don't know what you're talking about. Just stop. So, so fuck you, Bethany. And that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, not good, Bethany.
Nope.
Not good. I'm sorry. I think we'll have something from her soon.
No, I doubt it. Highly doubt it.
I'm sorry if some of you that identify as women were offended by some of the things I might have said.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
So I guess there was two pieces.
Well, the first was there was a list put together. Six scientists revealed the six keys to saying you're sorry.
I'm going to put these in now as part of the 6-point John I'm sorry scale. What are these six keys?
Okay, here are the keys themselves. Expression of regret. Explanation of what went wrong. Acknowledgement of responsibility. declaration of repentance, offer of repair, and request for forgiveness. Those are the points.
Declaration of repentance, and what was the last two?
Offer of repair and request of forgiveness. They go on to say that just because you request forgiveness doesn't mean that you expect it. Just means that you ask for it. That's part of the apology. You have to actually ask to be forgiven. So I want to just mention that. I'll put that in the show notes as well, but we'll be using these six key points moving forward to assess.
They think explanation of what went wrong. And so it's interesting that their key points are like, an expression of regret. People fuck that up all the time. Like, yep. I'm sorry you felt offended. That's not regret. An explanation of what went wrong. So here's the thing. An explanation of what went wrong in the absence of an expression of regret is a fucking excuse.
Exactly.
It's not an explanation. It's a fucking excuse.
Exactly.
So there's a little bit like, I get it. I understand. And I think to me, the explanation of what went wrong, that's got to be the smallest part. Like, I fucked up. That's what the explanation is. I made a mistake. Like,
right.
Don't be going on to like, what happened was the third moon of fucking
Endor.
Well,
I think sometimes you do have to have an explanation, because if it's something that was real, like if it's a business, for example, something happened, like you should be able to say, this is how this came to be.
Yeah.
We fucked it up.
Yeah.
And this is
I hear you.
Because
there's a series of things.
And not just that, but it goes to like when we're talking about the whole thing with Scholastic and Slavery with a Smile. They're like, we'll pull the book. Great. How the fuck did that book get there? Can you tell me that? Because that's what I'm really interested in. And with no actual like acknowledgement of that, everything they did was shit. Because they have not addressed any of the ways that this actually got to to come out.
And it's gone. And then same with they all kind of lead to another, but the acknowledgement of responsibility.
Yep.
I feel like sometimes when you go like ass winded on the explanation of what went wrong, you've just put like 32 people under the bus.
Oh, yeah.
And so then it's
and not you mostly.
Well, we call it the Steve Jordan excuse. Oh, yeah. Like,
I didn't even know.
When the acknowledgement of responsibility is, I didn't know.
But you're supposed to know, douchebag.
The buck stops with you.
So like, that's your.
It was your job to know.
That's what you should be apologizing for.
And that acknowledgement of responsibility is less an acknowledgement of responsibility and more an admittance of incompetence.
Right.
Like, you can't admit incompetence and claim that's an acknowledgement of responsibility.
Yeah. Doesn't work that way. So
in a declaration of repentance. I like that too. I'm not sure I've been
repentant
in my apologies pre-2-4.
Isn't that from Indiana Jones? The repentant man kneels or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. An offer of repair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. And I think sometimes I'll just, again, put a qualification. There are apologies where there can be no repair. And if that's the case, you need to acknowledge that you cannot repair what you've done. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think Juliana Rancic might have, like, our best apology on our show to date for her comments about Zendaya. And I think she made some sort of, you know, like, listen, I understand I can't change that. And my words hurt. And I really apologize.
Yeah. So the study that they did actually was a really great study, that they didn't tell people what the elements were in apologies that were read to, but they got rated and it was very obvious these are the key things. They did say that request for forgiveness was seen as the least important, so it made the least impact.
Okay.
And then they also said that the value of each of them was the same whether the apology was related to failures of incompetence or integrity. It didn't matter.
So each of the keys was irrelevant as to what type
of... Right, like what type of fuck up it was, it didn't matter. You still had to have all of them in there. And that participants were less likely to accept apologies when the job applicant showed a lack of integrity versus a lack of competence.
A lack of integrity is better than a lack of competence.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I feel like you can train competency. You can't really train integrity.
Yeah. And then they said that, obviously it's best to do apologies face-to-face, because things like eye contact and inflection and emotion were pretty critical in people getting the apology. So,
I'm not saying that this should be a part of the keys scientifically, but in my mind, maybe I'd add like a number 7 here, is the timeliness and juxtaposition.
Right.
Like, you know, there's a difference between, hey, I fucked up and I'm going to let you know I fucked up versus, oh, I just got dragged for 10 days and I'm going to fucking sheepishly say I fucked up. Like that kind of changes it to me. Maybe I'm being petty, but.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're being petty. So we do an actual apology to rate.
Yes.
Today?
We do.
You know, BuzzFeed had that fuck shit video, 27 questions black people have for black people.
We unfortunately had to talk about it on the Insanity Check podcast.
Yeah, I'm not playing it. I'm not even talking about it, but it was a fuck shit video.
If you want to hear Leslie, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even say it totally to Chris, but I had said, like, somebody sent it to me or something. I was like, listen, like, that is so, like, very white guy's lane and anywhere near that fucking video. Like, I have some issues with it, but I'm not going to, like, that's not me, right? So, I asked you about it. I'm like, well, you know, what do you think? You're like, nope, not going to do it.
Watching, like, that bullshit video.
You literally shut it down. Like, nope, not going to do it. That. I'm not going to watch it. Not going to talk about it. Not going to put it. John, not going to do it. Like, 3 days later, Chris is like,
let's talk about this video.
Talk about this BuzzFeed video.
Nah, it was good. It was good. It's good. Just, I didn't want to talk about it here. And I had managed to avoid it somehow. I did watch all the parody videos, though. They were very good. The response videos were awesome. So I think that's why I didn't feel the need to watch it, because I saw the reaction and it told me everything I needed to know. So a week later, BuzzFeed has issued an apology for its faux pas. This is the whole apology, so here we go. We've heard your concerns about last week's video. We made a mistake and want to get better at earning the trust of our black audience. That's the whole apology. Rate it.
But the video's still up there, right?
Sure is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I like Pia's response. Only the most painfully white organization could see gaining the trust of our black audience as a goal, i.e. hire black people.
Yeah.
BuzzFeed, says Pia that. Glenn. Mm-hmm. Just, and again, like, you wouldn't have needed, like, I think one at a editorial position, black person could have put the kibosh on this, and then maybe like a larger group at a lower position, maybe like 15 black interns could have, you know, had enough voice to be like, this is fucking awful.
Well, I mean, there were black people involved with it. But the thing here I always like to make clear is black people do fucked up shit stuff, too. So they're not, like, immune to fucking up.
And it doesn't mean that they knew the entire project and they had awareness of how it was
going to be done. I've heard from several people that worked there that a black person produced it. The black people helped write it. So I wouldn't go that far. The point is that this was directed at a company that put this up. This is their product that they decided to put out for the audience to see. So they're responsible, as are the people that created it. But, I mean, it doesn't matter who made it. It's offensive as fuck and stupid.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Where's our points here? Because I got to add another point. Because I put timeliness and juxtaposition. And I'm just gonna put modality, because a tweet.
Yeah, they tweeted it. And here's the thing that
pissed. That's not an apology.
Here's the thing that pissed me off, though. I saw the tweet and I went to it, and then I went to their feed. They posted, I'm not kidding you, every single race ask question video that they've ever created. Directly before they posted this apology. So it was here's all the great stuff we did one on white people,
Indians and Mexicans.
And then it was like, and we're sorry we missed up this one, black people. Fuck you. So, it gets a fucking zero.
That's not even sorry we missed this one, black people. That's almost like, you black people are overreacting. Your black outrage is not justified, because look at all these other communities we've been doing this to.
Dicks.
Yeah, that the Rod and Karen invoked the negative, and I think this deserves.
It's getting a negative.
Yeah, it's like a negative 50, right, man. Juliana Rancic was perhaps the best apology we've had, the highest rated, this is probably the lowest rated.
Yeah.
Like, because there's been other ones that, like, the actual word, like, does the word sorry even appear in it? They made a mistake. That's it.
They hope to do better. Fuck them. Anyways,
is there an expression of regret? Not really.
No.
Is there an explanation? Not at all.
None.
Do they acknowledge responsibility?
Nope.
No. Any repentance? Not at all. Offer repair? They can't, so they didn't. Request forgiveness?
No. Don't say that. They could. They could have pulled that fuck shit video down.
Oh, yeah, you're right. They could repair. You could.
They didn't.
You're right. Forgive
me. What are you talking about?
They could have pulled the video down. That would have been a repair. You're right. They didn't do shit. And then on our new metric, the timeliness, juxtaposition, and modality.
Bloop.
Super fail.
Bad.
Like the 10 things not to do, wait a week.
Yeah.
After being dragged, mm-hmm. and tweet it.
Yeah.
That just, like, fail, BuzzFeed. Yeah.
I think we're gonna try and get another show in this week. I feel like we'll have a good apology next week. I have one that I posted today on the Facebook page that we'll be discussing, and hopefully it'll get a good grade. I think it deserves one, but I'll be interested to hear your opinion.
But I said from good to bad. We went from Obama's lame duck blackness to you know, white people and apologies, and it gets worse. Bad boys, what you want, what you want, what you gonna do? So I got to hand it to...
Yes, all cops.
Not just the Guardian. So they did a really extensive analysis and FOIA request of different documents relating to Chicago's infamous Homan Square.
Yes, the black site.
The black site. And more and more is coming out. We're finding and learning more and more. Today, I guess yesterday, they released this article basically saying that the Chicago cops have been people bringing in. They've been bringing black people into this Homan Square black site for selling bootleg DVDs and fucking tapes and shit.
Yeah.
Mixtapes. Like, basically, like, the utmost of the worst of a broken windows policing policy, and they're taking these individuals into, like, a torture fucking chamber.
Yeah. According to police documents, at least 11 people observed by investigators for the RIAA selling bootleg CDs and DVDs, including Jay-Z's album and Marvel's Iron Man movie, were, quote, taken to Homan Square for processing, end quote. A woman was, quote, transported to Homan Square for processing after police observing a fencing location for stolen goods found her with two cans of Taster's Choice caffeinated coffee with Walgreens anti-theft stickers. Two cans of Taster's Choice decaffeinated coffee, Homan Square.
Fucking A, dude. And so the purpose of Homan Square is to keep individuals out of the general booking. And when you do that, your lawyer doesn't know you're there.
Yep.
You've got basically no rights constitutionally. Other cops don't know you're even there. Nobody mm-hmm. knows anything. And so they now have a system for logging suspects into Homan Square, potentially making it discoverable to the public or at least other cops. And the Guardian discovered that was perhaps put in this year.
Yeah, this year. It's been secret this whole time.
I just, Chicago's really taking an L with this fucking Homan Square bullshit.
Yeah, but. And in fact, check out hashtag don't, gosh, now I gotta look it up. Asada's Daughters and BYP 100 and Black Lives Matter Chicago just launched a new initiative today. They had an event called Beyond. Beyond by Anita, and they launched the new it's Don't Pay Dante. So they are looking to save CSU and really challenging the city of Chicago about the amount of money that its police department spends comparatively to the education, especially CSU, which is a public, mostly black school of higher learning. So
yeah, and that individuals went on a hunger strike to kind of keep from getting closed and different buildings.
No, that was a different school. That was a high school.
Sorry, my bad. But Chicago's public schools then are compounding the issue. But we had a tractor trailer we hadn't done in a long
time.
We
have a tractor trailer this week.
Hold on, let me get my...
Tractor trailer!
So this week, the trailer for Nat Turner's The Birth of a Nation, which I think comes out next year, but it was, I think, the highest movie bought at Sundance this year, and it was financed solely by the star and producer and writer. I don't think he's directing it. I don't think so. so I wanted to watch that.
Okay. I'll watch it on my end at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Trees, barren, strange fruit.
Heavenly Father, we come to thank you for your word and your will.
Blood on the leaves, and blood at the roots.
You listen to him, and you might just make it into heaven.
Amen.
Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze.
Submit yourselves to your masters with all respect.
Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
Brethren, I pray you sing a new song. Sing praise in the assembly of the righteous. Let the saints be joyful in glory. Let the high praise of God be on the mouths of the saints and a two-edged sword in their hands to execute vengeance on the demonic nations and punishments on those peoples. To buy bind their kings with chains. Dishonor have all his saints. Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. Sing to him a new song.
I'm here for that.
My goodness, does that look good?
You know, I immediately thought, I think it was Rod that said, you know, folks aren't tired of slave stories and narratives. They're tired of slave narratives centered on the white people.
Yeah, this is not that. So no, a few things I noted. One is that it's, like you said, it's definitely focused on the black characters, which I think is fantastic and certainly something we don't get to see. And so I'm excited to see the movie. And also, visually, like, honestly, we could have almost watched that trailer without any sound and it still would have been incredibly powerful.
And Nina doesn't. She's
well,
good.
I'm saying take Nina out. Take sure, everything sure. out. Like turn your sound off and just watch it visually. And it was stunning. That one part with the little white girl and she had the black girl on a leash.
Yeah.
That's like, holy shit. And I think that's a confrontation of slavery in a really, like, specific way, okay, about the brutality of it, about the lack of humanity afforded to slaves. I think we so often just gloss over that. And even when brutality is shown, it's this specific super mean white guy. And there's another white guy that's not that mean. It's always put up as this, like, it's how this person decided to
individualize it.
To use slavery for bad things. That's what allows people to go to plantations and ask the tour guide. Yeah. But they were nice to their slaves, right?
They got fed. They had a roof over their head, right? It wasn't that bad, right?
I also saw there was a love story there with him and his wife. Yep. Like, that really came through. I'm excited. I think it's going to be great.
Do you know who the director and director?
Nate Parker is the star of it. I want to see who the director, because
there's a couple of shots that looked stylized in just a really good way. Like, I don't know if they're using a filter, but they're using a lot of tight close-up shots, I think, to be more evocative emotionally of the characters.
Right.
But it looked powerful. I think it's going to be really good.
I think he did direct it. Nate Parker.
Fantastic. Looks like. Good for him.
Mm-hmm. So that will be good. We'll obviously be going to see it.
Oh, yeah. I like the nod to the fucking 1915 DW silent Klansman movie.
Oh yeah, of course. It's certainly for specific purpose.
Yeah, was it the same name? I think it was The Birth of a Nation.
Yeah, The Birth of a Nation. Yeah,
KKK whatever movie.
Movie. Mm-hmm.
All right, we got to circle back and get something better. That's good. Nat Turner's good. What else we got? We got.
All right. So we have dope black girls this week. I mean, black girls are just generally dope, but we're shouting out 8 black women who managed to make history at Indiana School of Education this past week. All getting their PhDs together. It's so fantastic. They've been dubbed the Great 8, and they're set to receive their PhDs from the university this summer in the same field. They were all on different paths at different times, but they're set to make history at the Indiana School of Education, where they're all doctoral candidates.
Meaning the Indiana School has never had 8 black female doctoral candidates ever?
Yes. No, they have not. They're set to walk across the stage in May. So this is Nigeria Njoku, Demetrius Hutchins, Jasmine Haywood, Jahari Shuck, Tiffany Kaiser, Jada A. Phelps Moltier, Juhana Ann Rogers, and Shannon McCullough. Again, they've been dubbed the Great 8. And it's really exciting. And
that's
kudos
exciting
to them. And so wonderful. Shuck, just their quotes have been just so beautiful. Shuck said, "We really value the fact that we need each other to deal with emotional expression." Haywood said, "When you're the only or one of a handful of people of color in a classroom, particularly when it comes to speaking about issues of race, you can often become the token or spokesperson." And they formed a tight bond that now has them set to receive their degrees at the same time in a field where black women are rare. Inside their sister circle, they were able to decompress their feelings that may arise with being one of the few women of color in a class. So they got there because they, their sisterhood. I think it's so awesome and wonderful and just so cool. So kudos.
That's fantastic. And I think, I don't think I'm mistaken, but I believe black women are the fastest growing among the educated. They're getting degrees and going to college and advanced degrees at a great pace. So that's terrific to see. But even then, 8 was a It's never happened before. That was an anomaly.
Yes.
Not for women, not for white men, but black women. Mm-hmm. So
mediocre white men.
Yeah, from dope black women to half-assed white dudes. What are you playing? Is that you? What is that?
That's me.
Oh, no. What is it? She's trolling us mediocre white dudes.
Yo, VIP.
Let's kick it.
Really? I thought you were gonna. I thought for a second maybe we were under pressure.
Yeah, right. Stop, Rob. Yeah. Please.
If you're gonna do,
he's about as mediocre as you can get.
I was thinking maybe Informer, Snow.
No, but that's not that. That's a very good song. So okay, don't sleep on Snow.
So James Cameron is apparently making four new Avatar sequels, and he's doing it out of spite and from a tweet. Someone showed me a tweet. This is in Cameron's own words. Someone showed me a tweet by this woman, Dana something. Dana Smith. And she was. I'm paraphrasing here, but it basically something along the lines of, see how many of you can name one character or one line of dialogue from Avatar. And the implication was that nobody could because the film, despite making a lot of money, didn't make a huge impression on people. So I got my team together and showed them this tweet and said, you know what? You know what we got to do about this? And we came up with lots of ideas, just kind of put everything on the table. But the one we kept returning to was making four Avatar sequels instead of just one. Fucking and we were planning. The idea being that if we had five Avatar movies spanning, you know, like two decades or whatever, and people were constantly being bombarded with Avatar from every direction, something would have to stick. So really, it all started with a tweet, which is kind of amazing when you think about it. So his plan is mass bombardment of Avatar until someone can name a character.
Right.
That's your goal? There a movie does not make, I think. But I can, you know, hey, I could be wrong. And you know what? A lot of people remember Jar Jar Binks for the wrong reason. You know what I'm saying? Like you could make a character memorable, just doesn't mean it's fucking good. And I have to be I don't know what the term is. Maybe somebody, one of the genres, can make up what this word is, but former Avatar stands that are now like, oh yeah, that shit did not stand up to
time. Actually, the whole thing was a joke, though. He didn't really, it wasn't really for spite.
Oh, it's not? So why'd he even say it?
I thought it was funny.
Oh, geez, I thought that was for real.
Yeah, I wish that was the reason. That's my point. I really do. I think it would be a really great reason. To me, it's like, okay, spite, I get it. His actual reason? We began to bump up against the limitations for our art form, explaining that his original plan for three sequels was too restricting and that he needed more space for the epic saga he has in mind.
Oh, five, says even longer-winded rites of shit. Dude.
Yeah, that's the mediocre part. The other part, I was like, you're an asshole, but I get it. This shit, listen, James, nobody wants your fucking sequels.
Like I said, when I saw it in the theater, like 3D IMAX, I was like blown away. I was like, oh my God, it's amazing. And it, like everyone, it wasn't very long. We're like, well, wait, that kind of sounded like Dancing with Wolves. But anyway.
Kind of. I said I liked it better the first time I saw it. It was called Dancing with Wolves.
We walked out of
the
theater.
And that movie was offensive as well. So, but yeah.
The movie itself is just like a visual cornucopia. The actual like plot and MacGuffin and other shit are just total crap. Mm-hmm. And CGI is one of those things that, like, I'm not saying it doesn't hold up well, but
it doesn't.
Well, the Moore's Law of computing, right? The processing speed doubles every like 6 months or something. So if this is, I don't know, what is it, 6 years old? Maybe like 9 or 10 when he started working on it. Shit's come a long way.
Yeah, very long.
And it's not that he looks bad, but, you know, I don't know.
Nobody wants your fucking sequels. That's the long
story
short of it.
Nobody needs four of them.
Don't nobody need it.
Four of them? No.
So, very smart brothers, the one Damon Young, was back at it again. He had an article entitled, Dear White People, Here's 10 Ways to Tell If a Black Person Actually Likes You. And you wanted to read it here on the air.
I did. Yes. I was pleased that there was, you know, like I said, the solving the puzzle. There's 10 ways to tell if a black person doesn't hate you.
So the reason why Damon wrote the article is because they were looking at their analytics of the site and they came to realize that they have a little bit larger white audience than they originally thought. Okay. And so this was his gift to them to write this piece that was specific.
Number 11, if I write an article about you.
Yes. He says, now if you're a white person voluntarily reading VSB, you might have some questions about black people. I can't answer them all, but there are some I can, namely how you can tell if a black person you happen to know actually likes, trusts, and respects you and isn't just hanging out with you for free beer and stock portfolio tips. There are numerous indicators, but for the sake of time and space, we're gonna do 10.
And you know what, and I gotta get...
I'd like to know, I'm gonna read them, and I want you to tell me first time that a black person did this thing for you, if they have it all.
I got you. I'm going back to his point about checking analytics. They came across the demographic information that informed me we had a larger white readership than I assumed. What was that demographic? What was that metric? Is it like Safari, AOL? Like, what was the... I'm going to have to ping him. But let's hear these 10 ways.
So number one, you're invited to places, spaces, and events that will be mostly black people. It's a well-known fact that we black people are generally more comfortable in mostly white spaces than you. White people tend to be in mostly black spaces, mostly because we're always in white spaces, and we've gotten used to it. So since we're aware, most of you act plum fools, run around nothing but black people. If you happen to be invited somewhere where your presence increases the white population by 100%, we trust you'll be able to handle it. Or we hate you and we want you to be really uncomfortable. One of the two.
Yeah, 1998 Funky Buddha Lounge.
That was the first time?
No, it was the first time, but like that was like there was a, you know, I had met all of your friends, all of them were black.
Right.
And maybe there's one that was white, but we're hanging out with all your black friends. I don't want to say their names, but you know whose birthday it
was. Yeah,
but,
I know whose birthday it was.
I think there was the one person like, yeah, you know, you're like the whitest dude ever, but you're pretty cool. Like, it was, like that was sort of like, you're not too bad. Like, that was like almost the half dap.
Right.
And then we went to something else, maybe a dinner party. But I remember that birthday and getting invited to the Funky Buddha Lounge.
I was like, all right. She thinks I can do this. All right. Number three, white is officially a permanent prefix for your name. So instead of just Kim, you're White Kim. Or if you were Drew, and you'd be White Drew.
I don't know if I've ever been White Drew.
Haven't been White Drew. All right. Yeah. I can see that not happening.
I just don't think there's been an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very white guy, though, so it's kind of like...
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, whatever. Number four, you're allowed to bring the potato salad if you're invited to a black person's potluck and you volunteer to make and bring the potato salad and you're not immediately doused with a bucket of chloroform, you've officially made it to the circle of trust.
Yeah, that's good. But you skipped the one about the reverse invite. If a black person accepts a white person's invite to an all-white space, that could lead to their death. That's another...
That's later.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the points. Not there yet, though.
It's number two.
Oh, did I miss it?
Yeah.
So. Oh, sorry. Yeah, we accept your invitations to all white spaces that might lead to our death. It's one thing to be the only black person in an office or even a nightclub in the city, but it gets a little hairy when we're invited to a white person's house for a dinner party or a camping trip or West Virginia. If the invitation is accepted, we trust you're not attempting to murder or eat us. And we also trust you made sure not to invite your fuck shit friends that will ask the white in the black lives can you mumbling on black crime.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who I would have invited that would have been like, I didn't, everyone I've invited to a space like that, we've already been friends. Like, it wasn't like, oh, now I know, if that makes any sense.
What do you mean, oh, now you know?
Like, this is a data point, like, oh, this black person accepts me because they've accepted my invitation to this white space.
Right.
Any black person I've invited to a white space.
Oh, you already felt accepted by them?
I've already been pretty close with them. I didn't need this data point.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like testing the waters, like inviting you or other friends to, you know, my fuck ass concerts in white spaces.
Yeah.
I've dragged you to enough fish shows for a lifetime.
Yeah, probably. Too many. Number five, you're allowed to touch, do, or cut a black person's hair. Highest level of trust, according to Damon.
Yeah. I don't know when the date specifically, but, you know, there's definitely a like... miseducation of Drew when it came to like black hair.
Black
like,
hair, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just, and I don't mean.
Well, and I had a relaxer then.
Yeah.
So I think that's even more. Like,
well, and I would say I'm using the word ignorant in the truest and correct
sense.
Like
you didn't know anything.
I did not know anything. Right. And so I would ask, and you were polite, and it wasn't like, you know, I was bombarding you or I needed to know, but there was like definitely like, I'm like, I don't understand. What is a perm? Like, what do you mean a relaxer? Why do you need a relaxer? What does it do? I don't get it. I didn't understand the shower cap, and I didn't understand, you know, like weave and various things that women do for their hair, protective styles and things and different stuff. And you gave me a whole vast education. But I would say, so you used to have your hair very, very short,
mm-hmm.
and you used to have a relaxer.
Mm-hmm.
And you would at some point, you'd go to the maybe like every week or every like, you know, like maybe every week, go about every 10 days or you'd get your hair done. And it was almost constantly, you know, relaxed and blown dry. But there'd be, you know, maybe like two or three days in there where you'd, you know, you do a co-wash or something, and it'd be curly.
Right.
And I have a, I can't lie, the white fixation with touching hair is, real. It is
like,
real.
Like, seriously so think bad. My hair is your hair. Like, when I cut it last, you were like, oh.
I do. I have
it's all gone.
I have like an inappropriate ownership of my hair.
Yeah, it's bad.
We grew it together.
Yes, we both suffered through my two-hour detangling sessions.
You've allowed me to touch your hair, wash your hair, and you know, but for a long time now.
Yes.
You've ruined me.
Oh, well. You have a black significant other and no one cares. So I think you've got that one.
I've got that one.
Yeah. You say something.
No one cares? I think no one cares.
Yeah, I don't think so. You say something kind of, sort of, racially insensitive. Not Strom Thurmond racist, but mildly racist. 80s sitcoms racist, let's say. And it results in a conversation. So,
oh, yeah. I've been there.
You've been there.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to think of an example. I can't. I don't know. But I'm
well,
sure.
I would say your entire conversation with Ennis was kind of that. Just to put a little.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. Oh, yeah.
That's
oh, yeah.
What that was?
Totally. I was thinking with you. I was
oh,
thinking,
it doesn't have to be with
no, you're right. You're
you
right.
Know I was, other I, black people. So.
I do. You're right. My entire conversation with Ennis was. I didn't. You're right. It was kind of racist.
It was 80s sitcoms racist. Said, it was.
The opening was. In as polite a way as I could frame
why
it.
Why do you need the black?
Why does there need
Miss
to be a
America?
Miss Black America? Yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Totally 86.
And then, like, number two was like, what's with the Africa emblems and the pro Africa colors? Like, you know, would you be mad if I walked around with, like, Irish fucking.
Lord have mercy.
Oh, yeah. I went full stupid.
How about if I wore an Irish flag?
18, man.
Go ahead. Do it. Dude.
You know better, you do better.
I never even understand that line of thinking, though. Like, what? Take me back, babe. What really, like, what. What led you to be like, that's a rational thing to say
it's
to
the,
somebody?
And I don't know what led me to it, but I'm sure it's the same factors that led people to say that same shit today, that the default is whiteness, and you don't know that. You don't think of yourself as white. You don't talk about white as a race. I didn't say, what would I do walking around with symbols of whiteness? I said symbol of Ireland. Because
right.
That's what I think of myself as, Irish rather than white. And because you don't think of yourself as white and you don't think of the race as white, when pro-blackness and other affinity things are you know, rooms and spaces are made available, we feel excluded, you know, because the default is white.
Right.
So when you feel excluded, you question it. And then a way to question it is to play the fucking, like, reverse idiot fucking straw man devil's advocate. Like, well, what if I wore a shillelagh and a fucking four-leaf clover on my neck? What would you do then? Like, I don't know, but that's what the immediate. I feel excluded, and now I'm gonna say, well, how would you feel? And it's exactly the. I mean, you hear that all the time. There's not an NAACP for white people. If there was, it'd be racist. Like, yeah, you're right. It would be.
Like, because the purpose of it isn't needed. So yeah. Oh. Anyway,
you're lucky. You should thank Ennis.
Yeah, I thank him all the time. So yeah. I've thanked him personally. Yes, I have. Number eight, we say something critical of another black person while in your presence. If Duran is being an asshole and we like you and trust you, we'll acknowledge that Duran is being an asshole. And we might even agree with your assertion that Duran is an asshole. If we don't like you and trust you, though, and Duran is being an asshole, Duran is just going to have to be an unacknowledged asshole. And if you dare bring it up that Duran is an asshole, we go into human resources.
Yeah, and I didn't think this when we read this the first time, but right. Now I'm reading it. I kind of feel like with you and me, not again to focus on you as the only black person in my life, but there's definitely a period of time where, like, I kind of like refrained from any critique of anything black or black persons ever because like, and then like there was like a period where I would like ease into like, well, I don't want to be like anti-black, and I'm not sure why, but I kind of think I don't like this person. You're like, oh, they're a fucking horrible person. I hate him too. I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I'd kind of come at it a little bit different way.
That's so
like
funny.
I'm not trying to like, I'm not sure, but I'm not really thinking that. Oh no, they're a fucking asshole. Oh, okay, good.
Hilarious, hilarious.
I probably still don't mentally critique black folk in anyone's presence, and if I do, it would maybe be in front of yours, and it'd still be a qualitative in front of it. Like, I'm not sure about
That's good. White people, take notes on that one. That's a good one. Number nine, you're single and you express romantic and or sexual interest in a black person and no one cares. So it's one thing to bring your own black boo to the party, but you come to the party solo and leave with a black boo and no one bats an eye is some ninth Dungeon Legend of Zelda shit. I think it's only been done successfully 17 times.
Yeah, that's not me.
No, definitely not.
I fell in love with you and you have a new black. But on the flip side, when Look Who's Coming Home to Dinner on your family, like everyone in your family was, oh, we knew she was going to have a white guy.
Oh, yeah. They weren't surprised at all, which is funny.
They didn't bat an eye.
I had never brought a white person home ever, so that's really funny. Number 10, we allow you to bring other white people around. Mm-hmm. Getting invited to game night is on this list, but it's the weakest thing on it. The invitation could be more of a social experiment than actual acknowledgement of sincere friendship. Maybe we just wanted to see how a white person would describe Wesley Snipes while playing Taboo. You never know. But if you ask if you can bring a friend and we say sure, it's a sign that we like and trust you enough that we'll give these stranger white people the benefit of the doubt because you would know better.
I don't think I've...
done that? I think you have. You have plus one. I remember the first time you plus one was Mike Bear's...
Oh, yeah. I brought Ian.
You brought Ian. Ian's awesome, so it worked out great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd Miss Smooth Mustache slip in there?
That I don't know, and I won't take credit for that one because that's all you.
Yeah.
100%. So I know people really like when we do music stuff, and I came across this article that talked about the 15 best one-hit wonders from 2001.
Oh, I like that.
And I thought we could play them and see what we each remember about them. I didn't know all of them, and so we'll see how it goes.
So 2001, you and I had just moved from New Orleans to Pennsylvania?
I think we had probably not moved yet.
We were still in New Orleans.
We were in New Orleans for all of 2001.
Okay, that's one of that. That's right. So there's going to be some of that Master P music on this.
No, but these are one hit wonders. Master P was not a one hit wonder.
Okay.
Don't disparage Master P here.
I meant that.
But that's the era.
That not just the era, but that.
None of them were one hit
label.
Wonders.
No, all right.
Yeah, they don't have one. That's Cash Money. They were taken over for the 99 and the 2000. So that means that in 2001 they were fine.
I got you.
Got it? Okay. Get it together, dude. The first is actually a favorite of mine. So let me make sure I've got sound going, which I do. Here we go.
This is on our workout mix.
Get your hands on his cash. While he was scheming, I was beaming in the beamer, just beaming. Can't believe that I call my man cheating. So
I love this song.
To make him pay for it all. So I went to Neiman Marcus on a shopping spree. And on the way I grabbed Sole and Mia. And as the cash box rang, I thought everything away. Oops, there goes the dreams we used to say. There goes the times we spent away. There goes the love I had, but you cheated on me. And that's for that now. There goes the house we made a home. There goes your name.
So that was Blue Cantrell.
I like that too.
Hit him up style.
It's on the, we had a playlist for a long time that I'd work out to that had that on it.
Yeah. So I love that song. But you know, the thing that it reminds me of now is American Idol during Hollywood Week for the past, like, I don't know how, probably since this, they've had that song as an option. And the groups that pick it always do horrible. They forget the words. It's always like a fucking disaster. So I think that's hilarious. But I like that one. This one is a little, I think this is a Making the Band type deal, if I recall correctly.
What's the band?
This Dream. Do you remember that was the first group that they put together, the girls group?
Bad boy, that's Bad Boy. We rock and we rock. I see clearly now, and we rock. 26 Bad Boy. My name is Diddy. Remix. Pulling petals off the flower, trying to get your way. You know what? I don't think that's the right version of the song. Let me see. This is the right one. See Diddy putting himself in there again, though.
Diddy, of course,
it's definitely Diddy. 2001.
These were four girls. I remember this song. But only one of them could sing. Give it all, girl, give it all you got. I can take you There was like a sporty one, and then the one Hispanic girl could sing. That's funny. Diana, I think her name was. That's the one. Diddy, typical Diddy bullshit.
This next song is my fucking jam.
This is your jam? Oh, all right.
I don't know why I loved this so much back in the day. I thought Crazy Town was going to go. I know. I'm like, Crazy Town, it's blending rock
like
and fucking.
He's like raps. It's
oh,
terrible.
I loved it, dude. It was like a precursor to Linkin Park. Come,
my lady. You're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Come, my lady. You're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Such a sexy, sexy, pretty little thing. This April bitch, you got me sprung with your tongue ring. And I ain't gonna lie, cause your loving gets me high. So to keep you by my side, there's nothing that I won't try. Butterflies in her eyes and her looks to kill. Time is passing, I'm asking, could this be real? Cause I can't sleep, I can't hold still.
So bad.
It's so bad, so bad.
I can feel, too much is never enough. You always there to lift me up when these times get rough.
They did, they went Lollapalooza. They were everywhere that year.
Oh, God, 2001. What did you do? Speaking of, what would you do? City High, y'all.
Boys and girls want to hear a true story. Saturday night was at this real wild party. They had the liquor overflowing the cup. About 5-6 strippers trying to work for a buck. Then I took one girl outside with me. Her name was Lonnie. She went to junior high with me. I said, why you up in there dancing for cash? I guess a whole lot's changed since I seen you last. She said,
what would you do if someone's at home? Crying all alone on the bedroom floor cause he's hungry. And the only way to feed him is to sleep with a man.
First of all, City High had another song.
This is not quite one hit
so
wonder.
I don't think it's a one hit wonder, but whatevs. This next song, I saw it and I don't know what it is, but it's called Who I Am by Jessica Andrews. Let's see, maybe I'll remember when it plays. It's a country hit.
Never see the seven wonders. That'll be alright.
You recognize this song?
Not at all.
Me neither. I love country music.
I recognize every other one, but not this one.
I recognize this one. If I never win a Grammy, I'm gonna let it go to the chorus just in case I don't remember. Nope, don't know it. Sorry. I love this next song. We might have to play it for a bit longer than the chorus. It's so good. This song's title has 2 exclamation points at the end of it.
As it should.
It should. It's so good.
He was a 6-foot stallion, say a storybook thug. He was a kind that made you wonder how he put down the love. He had a hickey in his pocket, a red rock in his ear. He made my heart stop palpitating every time he came near. He got a spanking new range, for a tight wardrobe. His pants were sagging, he was padded, and his hair was cornrowed. He had his wrist bling blinging, and his long legs was bowed. He tried to push up on me, but I knew he had me at gold. I do, I wonder if you feel the same way I do. I can see it. Back. But when I looked deep in his eyes,
actually reminds me a lot of New Orleans, this song. That was us in New Orleans, right? Iced out players.
Yeah, and I think I think that workout mix might have even been like
the totally hits.
Yeah, not totally hits, but like we were adding like, you know, hot tracks.
Current songs. Right. That probably makes sense.
And this was on there too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because we just migrated to iTunes or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. Oh no, this is before iTunes.
Oh, you're right.
We wouldn't have had iTunes then, but we might have had a tape had a mix. Or something.
Yeah, something
to mix. So this next one is from Eden's Crust, which was the first group that Nicole Scherzinger
first of four.
Was in 2001. I remember this one.
They won American
Pop,
Idol.
No, yeah. It was Pop Stars.
Right, the predecessor.
It was about a group, though.
Yeah, I was right there like a little wife. I was everything that you need, always in line. I was living.
Oh, it's so early 2000s. Oh gosh, all those synthesizers. Good God.
I like Nicole, but they try to give her an album like 10 it's different ways from
Just
Sundays.
Stop. She gets too many chances. This next one also is from Pop Stars. It's Daylight in Your Eyes by No Angels. Do you remember them? I don't remember this song.
Wanna know you better.
Nope, stop.
Nope, don't know this song at all.
That's not a one-hit wonder. That's a no-hit.
That's a no-hit wonder.
That's not a hit.
And next up, we have Evan and Jaren. I do remember them. This was on frickin' Dawson's Creek.
The Creek.
They're brothers. I think they were twins, I want to say. Yes, they are twins. I remember. She rolls the window down. So Dawson's Creek. Like angsty, sitting on my bed.
Pacey.
Jen, I love you. Hilarious.
We don't have to hear this.
No, we too don't.
I don't know this next one, though. I might recognize it.
I think you'll recognize it when we play it. I think this has like a tango beat or something.
Debola Morgan's Dance With Me.
Dance With Me. Yeah, you remember it.
Dance With Me. My baby, let's dance till we go crazy. The night is young and so are we. Let's make love and dance the night away. What I really wanna do is just dance with you and feel your body tight. Say hi to do it right. I'll show you every move. I know just what to do. Each step will feel so fine. One dance and you'll be. So baby, when we hit the floor, you'll be asking for more. Let's make a love and dance another way. Oh, come and dance with me, my baby. My baby. Let's dance till we go crazy. Hey. The night is young and so are we. Let's make love and dance the night away. That was a good one. Yeah, I remember the song, like when you played the beat, I'm like, oh, I can remember that. But I wouldn't have ever known her name, the name of the song, anything else.
Yeah. I remember her name when I saw it. This next girl is literally, in my mind, referred to as the poor man's Jessica Simpson, who is already the poor man's Britney Spears, who's already the poor man's Christina Aguilera. So we are going way down into the mediocre white
That's
girl.
That's like fourth derivative of Christina Aguilera.
Yes, and the copy of a copy of a copy. This is what that sounds like.
Yeah. We're talking about Willa Ford, people.
Oh, yes. They know. Out when everything the song can be is everything that I can be. I wanna be my turn. Let me let you know that I can't promise that I won't do that. So, but say the time and place, cause you make me wanna misbehave. I wanna be there. Make that look so good. I've got things on my mind. I never. I you're bad, Willa. You're very bad. Nah. You accomplished that. You got
it's,
that.
This is like you're ripping off like a bad imitation of a bad imitation of a bad imitation of Britney
and then
Spears.
Is you. Yeah. It's very, very bad. It's like 15 steps down. You were very bad, Willa. I actually love this next song, and I actually sing it all the goddamn time. Two of the people in this group are still pretty stars. One of them is one of the hosts of The Talk. No. The Talk?
I don't know which one. There's so many now.
Yeah, I think it's The Talk.
The one with...
No, The Real. The one okay. with Tamar. The Real. Sorry, it's too many of them. The Real, Adrian Bailon, and Natari Naughton, who is the dark-skinned young lady in the group. She is an actress. She's on Power. She's been in a bunch of stuff. And, of course, I'm talking about a three, a L, a W. Now, I'm going to stop it here for 1 second because I know all the black people listening are about to make fun of the third girl in the group's lisp on this song because she has to say the word promises twice, but she has a lisp. Don't do that. Just let her say, just let it go, people. I've even seen memes. I'll have to look one up for you, Drew, because you'll find it funny. Don't make fun of her.
I won't.
I'm talking to the people listening.
I'm getting a little tired of your broken promises, promises. Looking at your pages, seeing different numbers and numbers. Call you when you're studying, hanging with the fellas, hanging with my girls. You always getting jealous and jealous. I was with you when you didn't have no fellas, no fellas. Hanging at the crib, chilling with your mama, your mama. Never funded you, never brought the drama, the drama. Now you just a screen player, please.
No, I'm not the one.
Now listen, the reason why black women love this song is because pretty much that's what I say to everybody all the time. No, I'm not the one. Don't. Just let you know.
You do what you do.
Adrian now. LW. Kylie Williams is the name of the third lady. I thought it was rude to not do that. Although Notori was replaced by one Jessica Benton after she left the group. And when I say left, I mean that Kylie Williams' mother, who is the manager of the group, physically kicked her out and threw a piece of chicken at her. Long story short. That's a real true story. This next one is by someone named Mikayla, and I've never heard of it either.
It's So In Love With Two. TWO.
Interesting.
Polyamory? A triangle?
She's 14 and she...
Oh, sorry. That was inappropriate. Now I feel dirty.
I'm number one. There could never be no one like you. How come I feel this way about? I'm number two. Never tried to tell me what to say or do. I'm so in love with you.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I've ever heard it.
Now, I'm going to skip around. I'm going to play first the second to last song because the last one I want to play is the one of the best songs ever. And this one is by ATC and Collagen Girl. I don't remember the song either, but we'll see. Oh, I remember this song. Oh, it's terrible.
The kisses of the sun.
Remember this song?
No.
Oh my god.
Like an exotic dream, the rain of playing
songs. He said la 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 like 100 times.
I've never heard, I don't know what to say.
Oh, now, yeah. Now I remember. Get my pacifier and my glow stick. Come on, let's go.
Totally. This is on an album called It's the 90s. Like, literally, that's the name of the album. It's funny.
I said Round the World. I'm like, I don't think it. I don't recognize it. And then as soon as that, la, 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 la. All right.
So the final song on the One Hit Wonder list, and it's sad that she's a One Hit Wonder because her voice is insane. She's so amazing. What's play it?
Baby, let me explain to you. I'm saying,
what you saying?
It's not even like that.
It wasn't like that, but I saw you.
Baby, I don't love her.
You don't love me. You know what? I don't even want to talk.
This should have been on our R&B dialogue or monologue.
She don't mean nothing to
storytellers.
Yeah. She was just telling just
you Reggie probably would have got this one too. Sunshine Anderson.
Like this. Baby, damn.
Come home late. It seems you barely beat the sun. Tapping my shoulder, thinking you gon' get you some. Smelling like some fragrance that I don't even wear. So if you want some loving, I suggest you go back there. Where you came from, day to day with you, it's always something else. Working my nerve, God knows that I don't deserve what you put me through. I've been so true to you, for you to come at me with another lame excuse. See, I heard it all before. All of your lies, all of your sweet talk, baby this, baby that. But your lies ain't working now. Now look who's hurting now. Look who's hurting. I had to shut you down. Your lies ain't working, lies ain't working. Look who's hurting now. Look who's hurting now. I had to shut you down. What were you thinking? Bringing her into our home. In our bed, you must have fell and bumped your head. Messing up my sheets and violating me. Got me about to call my peace and take it to the street. There's nothing you can say that could persuade me to stay with you another day. You have crossed the line to the...
You know, I was listening to this song and it's really reminding me of that Jasmine Sullivan song, Bust Your Windows. Like, it almost sounds the same. Not exactly the same, but...
There was another one you played that I thought... what was the one... You played earlier, I forget which one, about, wasn't Blue
Today?
Control? Yeah, on this list.
Oh, yeah, Hit
where,
Him Up Style?
I don't know if it was Hit Him Up Style. It was one of them where it sounded a lot like Fantasia's I Need a 6 Foot, I Need a Good Man. You know, Fantasia's 6 Foot Four, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember that song. But
I love that song.
One of the ones you played lyrically and otherwise reminded me of that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know why.
I wonder what is the name of that song?
Let's see, let's look it up.
Now I want to listen to that song. I wonder what album was on. Fantasia been having a lot of albums out here in these streets to remember what it was. I do remember Hood Boy, right?
I think that's what it is.
This one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What year did this come out?
You gotta understand what I'm talking about. Talk about it in this one.
We gonna see you on Saturday, girl.
Girl, we gonna see you, Tasia. them say what you're. Fantasia is the truth.
And if y'all didn't know our
That's
Aunt Bunny.
Aunt Bunny from the Fantasia show. What was her reality show called?
I don't remember what it was called.
But yeah.
Got it, I'm the hottest around. They'll know when they see you rolling them Impalas around it. With the top down, feeling the
sound. My favorite Destiny Child.
Is it? I love T.I. Guys with the chrome wheels at the bottom. I know, I love T.I.'s music. I don't love T.I.'s.
Yeah, okay. T.I. is fuck shit.
He's one of them problematic people, but I love his fucking flow. I can't lie.
You gotta be G's, you way out of your league.
We like them boys that be in them legs leaning, leaning. Open them at the grill, gleaming.
She didn't let me play anything.
What
I had something queued up.
We like beat the beat in the back beating. I see so low from the chief man. I love how he keep my body screaming. A rude boy that's good to me with street credibility. If you start to say hood, I ain't checking for him. Better be street if you're looking at me. I need a soldier that ain't scared to stand up for me. Known to carry big things if you know what I mean. Like them boys up top from the BK. Know how to flip that money three ways. Always riding big on the freeway. With that East Coast slang, that is country girls. We like long cut teasers with the deep ways. So quick to snatch up your Beyonce. Always coming down, popping our way. Telling us that country girls are kind of girls they like.
All right, what you got? I was gonna put that on. Oh my god, it's literally on the screen right now.
Too
I'm
late.
Not even kidding. Ooh, turn that shit up.
Yeah. Don't get happy for huh? Did you know about it? I bought my homie.
I'm not even kidding.
This reminds me of the era perfectly.
It's literally on my screen right now.
Can't so, to come out.
I know what's gonna be next. Too. Right. I'll pull that up.
Heard some like down on the floor. Even louder, we got shooters.
Yeah, shooters.
Yeah. I turn around, I was staring at.
Hello.
Watch his door, got security good.
Check.
Jump right over counter, pointing that winky teller. I'm a shooter, shooter, shooter.
Let's go.
My hands up,
yeah.
They want me with my hands up. No,
I think they want me
shooter.
But no, I
come from the south, but when I open up my mouth, all come out.
This is edited like every.
Ooh, that's edited.
Well, and it's this guy even talking about like problematic. Like, there's a, is it a homophobic slur?
Yeah,
in the verse,
really, it's bad.
It's not exact. I mean, it's good music and flow, but it problematic.
Yeah, as hell. Mm-hmm.
What are you gonna play next?
Let's see if I can get it up.
Oh, I knew that too. I. I'm a Scott Storch.
This is the Scott Storch era.
Yeah, I'm in this business of terror. Got a head full of specs. Better grab me umbrella. I'm making it
rain.
I'm in this business of terror. Got a head full of specs. Better grab me umbrella.
And doesn't R. Kelly have a verse about like dragging women to his room
literally,
and shit?
Literally, he does. Like a caveman. We're going to play it too. Watch.
I make it.
Here he goes.
Like Major Payne, when I make it, when I be like, let's do it again. From the club to the group, inside my gates, up in my bedroom, screaming each other's name. They was purdy, purdy, I was flirty, flirty. Rose, roll, little bug, got it getting dirty, dirty. Don't ask me what my name is, stupid
my
bitch, I'm
famous.
You gon' make me aimless, leave your ass.
He's gonna shoot them.
Trying to stay on the, but these streets is a
part of me.
So don't get it twisted. You see, I order one bottle, then I order with one model, then I order
more bottles, then I order more models.
I'm from that city where them niggas don't play, man. I take a chick to my room like caveman.
Horrible.
Ski, 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 weatherman.
Make it rain.
Television, the weather channel, but I do not broadcast. I throw up more cash and change the forecast. Your boyfriend is lame, I make it rain on you. He never make it rain.
Look, Southern California,
where's your umbrella? Now get your raincoat, baby. I make it flood
like you gon' need a boat.
Fresh to death, we throwing money on the money. Stay fly, 25s when we ride on the ride. Alligator suede.
And isn't that the last verse about running a team on a bunch of girls in a van or some shit? Yeah,
he had a whole bunch of cars or something.
It's so bad. He's literally talking about running a train on girls. You gotta let Fat Joe's verse. He's the worst.
No, R. Kelly's is the worst.
We're debating now.
Blood
pussy club, facts and stripper, you know.
Make that bucket a pot of gold. It ain't no money like
remember Crispin used to dance this song all the time.
And no bitch getting none of my money. That's why the money got a clip to protect it from it. She got to ride for the A, pop for the A, live for the minute to be out for the day. Pop the metal, we're looking hot. It's the letters got the rock with the bezel on the trigger finger. Boss bitch in the ghetto, my Spanish trainer. Talk shit to a nigga with the blammer beamed up. When I see her, got a hand on my B and I got to give her one of these in the back of the team truck. Yeah, I'm in this business of terror. Got a head full of stacks. Better grab an umbrella.
I mean, the chorus is rain on those hoes.
Yeah. Hey, they need to be rained on.
Hey, Cal, call Joe. Let me know I'm at the Rolex. I just ran out of make it rain.
Come through, baby, we make it rain. E-class on the way to, we got 100 grand.
Make it rain.
Triple C's.
Make it rain.
Okay, it's the remix. I be repping my city, blowing hundreds and fifties. It's the hair, right?
Ricky hair, every night. Joey, I was listening, trying to spend some spinning rims,
trying to spend some dividends. My money, they swimming in. I'm the boss, I'm the boss, I'm the mayor, I'm the mayor.
Make it rain,
make it rain.
On these haters,
on these haters. Get your umbrella, fella, cause you blowing hella cheddar. I'm the nigga that you better, cause no one could do it better.
Yo, crack early 80s, crack baby. Mama paid me, made back by Mercedes. Work that, drop it, baby. Them pretty ladies, they drive me crazy. Them skies is hazy, I'm pop like 80. Somebody tell Mr. Bentley to bring his umbrella. Katrina not, it's just the one fella who got dumb cheddar and need a brain surgeon. Got me a designated thrower cause my hands hurt. I make it rain. It's cock, I bitch. It's not a game. Get them bottles, locos rich. Ain't nothing wrong with wanting a little happy ending. And we don't need a hotel, we parking lot pimping.
Yeah, I'm in this business for terror. Got a head full of stacks, better grab an umbrella.
All
right.
You're right. Joe's wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
It
but
wasn't.
I just want to. It's interesting now. We just played that. That's mm-hmm. all in your. We're talking about the problematic. And you're right. Fire. There's a. Think of the make it rain on them hoes yeah. and holding. And tell me now why throwing fucking money at Hillary Clinton's fucking limo wasn't fucking misogynistic as shit. I'm not trying to stand for Hillary. I'm not. I'm going to vote Democratic. You don't have to come back in my mentions, Bernie Bros, and be all fucking like blah, 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 blah. I'm going to vote Democratic. Doesn't fucking matter. I'm going to vote Democratic. But throwing money, like actual fucking like $1,000 worth of money at Hillary is this song is what that evoked. And you know it did. And you know it did. And that wasn't, but anyway, accidental.
Like, come on. It's
just she's a whore for Wall Street. No, just no.
The whole thing is absurd. And them trying to like pretend like we're stupid out here. Like, come on. They actually physically did the make it rain. Like in the video, they like actually did that with the money. Like, don't, come on. It's, come on.
He had to have a designated thrower. His hand was hurting.
And I'm glad y'all got $1,000 to just throw at a car driving
somebody
by.
Somebody tweeted that. Like we doing that ridiculous. Now? Is that activism and movement is doing now? We just got $1,000 to throw around at people? Jesus.
Yeah. It's terrible. So what else was, I'm trying to think what else was in 2000, some non-one-hit wonders that I know you
I don't know,
like.
We've been, is this like a 2.5 hour show now?
Who cares? What I'm do you, just saying you got nothing. Somewhere to go?
No, I got nowhere to go.
Oh, okay.
You punish our listeners with like 2.5 hours of our show.
This is from 2001.
Come on.
To
come on.
You're bottoming me out.
I got it.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Come on.
Bonnie's way around and let me know.
Don't be tripping when you see us in the club. Just show a little love. Represent your side like me. Round here. If you stick, you catch a hot one. My shotgun, a couple of them down one. Belvedere in the rear of the club, pulled up on dubs, and we about to go and buy the bar up. So for sure we ain't playing, hang with no lames, walk insane.
Hey, where the party at? Girls is on the way with a Bacardi, yeah.
Yes, we do.
Bottles and models talking all of that. No, I can't forget about my love.
Where the party at?
And all my girls.
It was 2001 the for shit. I was waiting for you to play it, but it wasn't the one at Wonder.
It is, but
you
I'm,
can't
I'm
stop.
On 2001
stop.
Now.
Stop.
Why?
You just can't besmirch this.
Oh, sorry. I'm not besmirching it. It's your
okay,
song.
I'm just making sure. And yes, we already asked. We already ascertained here. He can't sing.
Miss Slim cannot sing now.
Let me tell you what I'm gonna do. Let me show you that I feel you. Wanna freak, wanna ride with you. Wanna taste when I put my lips all over you. Can't get enough of you. Always thinking of you. So sweet, I can't forget. So good, girl, you make me quit. And I'm talking about
bitches and cream.
Oh,
I get it cause you know that I'm a
feeling. That's right.
Getting freaky, I'm a feeling limousine. It's even better when it's with ice cream.
Know what I mean? Bitches and cream.
I get it cause you know that I'm a feeling. Getting freaky, I'm a feeling.
Girl, you taste so good to me.
Ice cream.
Oh, oh, oh.
I never thought that I
addicted to you. On top, underneath, on the side of you. Better yet, baby, right next to you. Let the way you're just flowing down, and I can feel it all around. In the front, in the back of you. Ooh, I love the smell of you. Girl, you know what I'm talking about.
I remember 2001 being like the year that hip hop and R&B like just took over. Like they took over TRL, they took over the charts. And looking at the 100 top songs from the year, that's, yeah, you can see the switch. This is also the era of Ja Rule, of course.
Yeah, I was going to say, when did Pitbull start getting on every damn album
Pitbull
in the world?
Pitbull was later. I think he was still like doing something totally different when this was out. Yeah. Yeah. And Jennifer Lopez came out that year. I think she was doing all them songs with Ja Rule as well. And Nelly.
And you know, 2001 was actually the last, I don't say the last year, but it was one of the last years of actual like
record
CDs.
Sales.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I think it was NSYNC came out with Pop, and it sold like 2 some odd million in the first week, in like 7 days. So 2 million albums. And nobody does that shit anymore. Nobody, much less in a week.
Yeah. Don't mention NSYNC Pop if we're not going to play no NSYNC Pop. Just saying.
Did that come out in 2001? I don't know.
I don't know when it came
out. Listen, we can save NSYNC Pop for another day.
No.
Yeah, we'll be good.
But
we'll
Pop is so good.
No, we should talk about...
We should talk about what?
The TV shows you're watching.
All right, so
play Pop.
No. I was going to play another NSYNC song, but it's okay. I don't need to play any NSYNC. You know I love NSYNC.
I know you do. And
my
I honestly...
My favorite is NSYNC.
I do think of all... And I'm being dead ass serious. This is the real truth. I've been to concerts. I've done damage to my hearing. I think like top two damage to my hearing was an NSYNC concert. And not because of the music. Because of the fucking screaming fans. We saw NSYNC at
the Superdome.
Oh my
bad.
God. 60,000 teenage girls screaming at the top of their lungs.
It was bad.
Oh Jesus, it was deafening. I literally, it was like you could hear the screams reverberating off the walls. It was deafening.
This song low-key proves that JC is a better singer than Justin. Just saying. Fight me. Justin's verse.
He doesn't even know you're there. Oh no. He don't love your eyes, and he don't love your smile. Girl, you know that it's there. The middle of the night, is he gonna be by your side?
Oh no.
Or will he run it high?
You don't know, cause things ain't clear.
JC, I love.
You know, you're saying he's singing better than Justin. Maybe on this song, Justin came out with fucking Justified that like next year, 2002.
Yeah, and that's because of Timbaland. Let's not get it twisted. Just saying.
The kid can still sing.
I didn't say he was a bad singer. My point is that JC is the better singer in NSYNC. That was my point.
I think Justin's got a better range.
So you say, doubtful. You should listen to JC's solo album. I won't play it now, but I know there's many of you out there that agree with me. Shout out to JC Shaze. You're the best. Okay. So, what were we talking about? TV shows?
Yeah, we're doing our... Uh-oh. I think we played this last week, though, didn't we? A couple weeks ago?
I don't think so, did we?
This is 2002. Oprah fucking loves sucking this song.
It's a long intro.
It is. Trey should fucking produce more music again.
Jesus.
How many more bars are we going to get here, 50?
How many bars are we getting here, people?
One more? It's Vivo. I had to do this to get the swear words.
Go, shorty. It's your birthday. We gon' party like it's your birthday. We gon' sip a card like it's your birthday. And you know we don't give a fuck. It's not your birthday. You can find me in the club. Bottle full of bub. Mama, I got what you need. You need to fill the buzz. I'm in the having sex. I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug. You're in the getting rough. You can find me in the club. Bottle full of bub. Mama, I got what you need. You need to fill the buzz. I'm in the having sex. I ain't in the making love.
Clean version or whatever.
Well, YouTube, unless you like sign in and shit, does all kinds of weird stuff.
That's why you got to go on Tidal. That's where I get my music
Tidal,
from.
Tidal, okay. Mm-hmm. I'll know about it next time. So, fucking 12 Monkeys is back, yo.
12 Monkeys is back. I don't know how to feel about it. I thought the episode was good, but of course the ending of the show, the episode was really good. And I think it's interesting seeing this kind of like a reversal of... why can't I not remember their names now? The two main characters are the guy and the girl. That they almost have switched positions now in terms of not just where they are physically, because that's what happened at the end of the season, but also almost in their mindset, where it used to be he was just like, do anything, do anything, do anything. And she was like, wait, we got to think about it. And now it feels like that's flipped. And I love that. I think it's really smart. Orphan Black is also back.
Yeah, but you know, so
that shit.
Both 12 Monkeys and Orphan Black, yo. Like, I'm not saying that they're like difficult to watch, but like, you can't be like eating fucking like whatever and not paying attention. Like, at least for me, I have to like concentrate a little bit.
No, that show was a little, I mean, the season premiere was a flashback to basically events
three
that happened
seasons ago.
Prior
yeah.
to the very first episode.
The first, where she was the cop, what was her name?
Beth.
Sarah?
Beth.
Beth. Yeah.
So it was about Beth and what happened to her in the premiere episode of the show ever. Beth kills herself like
in the
first like minutes. Yeah. So it was really great and great to see her interacting with characters that we knew later on, especially her partner. And one of the things I thought of was that we hadn't seen him with the real Beth and how different he is. As opposed to him
with
having to play off of Sarah
yeah.
pretending to be Beth, because that whole time he kind of was like, something's off
right.
here.
You're
even
right,
though it's
right.
Beth, something's off. And so it was great to see him acting more comfortable, I should say.
It was a nuanced
very
in
different.
His role.
Yeah.
yeah
so I loved it. I'm excited that it's back. And of course, Outlander is also back. God bless it. Sassanach.
Sassanach.
Dina Fash. Anyways, that's going great and wonderful and beautiful, and
I like Outlander. For dudes, it's kind of like a female, you know, it's not just a female driven story, it's not just a heroine, but like the, you know, the MacGuffin surrounds the female character.
And I think beyond the MacGuffin, like good, better, and different, she's the strong one.
Absolutely.
In the show.
The story's about Claire.
It's, and I think that even belies it, because you can have a story about a woman, but it's still not her in the place of power in the story. And with Claire, and Diana's very good at this in all of the books, Claire is, you know, not just the catalyst, but she's the smartest one in every room she walks
yeah,
into.
Yeah, and it's...
She's the one that everybody looks to for advice. Her husband, who's this huge, hulking brute of a man, is like, what should we do? Like,
right.
literally, that's his go-to, like, thing to make sure is what does Claire want to do?
I remember at some point almost mockingly saying, like, oh, geez, you know, to make a female character strong, intelligent, you know, all these various things, the author, Diana Gabaldon, like had to send her back through time.
Literally.
And I kind of like made that like, oh, like, ha ha. But in the real, like it as a device, right? Like it, not that like, cause you got to suspend some disbelief to be like, she traveled through time.
Right.
But as a device, it's like, it doesn't, it as a viewer, especially as a male viewer, that device specifically frees you from any sort of like, I don't know what thinking, but like any sort of like dumbassery where it's like she can be the most badass, powerful, smartest fucking person because she knows what's going to happen. She's
and
like
beyond
clairvoyant.
That, but she's like a
she's
nurse.
Got medicine.
And
yeah,
she,
yeah,
yeah. So there's a lot of knowledge she has that they don't. And so it does give the viewer.
I'm trying to say it's not just that it's plausible or realistic.
It makes sense.
It makes sense.
Like you see, like, of course they're going to trust her. She's already like saved 10 people.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And not only does it make sense, but it makes sense in a way that allows the character to be pretty badass. Like I said, I for a relatively female-centric show, I don't know if men do or don't like it, I dig it. It's a really good show.
It's very good.
On Stars.
It's on Stars. Let's see.
We started watching something else that on, was it Hulu? What did we start to watch? We started to watch The Path.
The Path, which I like. I think there's two episodes.
Dices! We didn't talk about Dices! Dice. Fucking A dude, Andrew Dice Clay's got a new show called Dice.
Yeah.
And there's six of them, and they've aired three, but if you have Showtime, you can get all six at once. And we watched all six. We binged on it. It is
so funny.
A newer version of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Fucking just hilarious. Andrew Dice Clay is a fucking riot.
So funny. The one episode, if we're going to tell you guys to watch one, it's the third episode or is it the second
one?
Second episode.
Ego.
Adrian Brody is the guest star on it. They don't always have a guest star, but he has starred on this one as himself, but playing like a, I guess.
He's a method. He comes to Dice because like I'm a method actor. And I have a character in the central characters, like, you know.
Basically, he thinks it's Dice.
It's Andrew Dice Clay.
Right.
So I want to follow you around and learn about you and this and that.
Yeah.
And it's just fucking hilarious.
So funny. Like, really.
Oh, my God. Just cracking me the fuck up, dude. Like, really, really cracking me up. It's a good show.
Really.
I like the woman that plays his wife.
Yeah. She's Natasha Lagana, I think. Lagana or something like that. She's a comedian.
His best friend, Milkshake.
Oh, my gosh. So funny.
It's
played
good.
By Steve Coogan. So funny. The show is really great. And that's on, is that on Showtime?
I think it's Showtime.
I think it's Showtime.
Highly recommend that.
Mm-hmm, for
Dice.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else we're watching. We have something else on Hulu or something.
The Mindy Project. We watched a couple of those. Oh, we watched that show about the mascots.
Oh, that was kind
behind
of cool.
The mask.
Behind
that
the
was
mask.
Kind of cute.
Unless we're getting all kinds of weird shit that we hadn't had before.
Right. Now that we're...
You know, I'll tell you, the amount of shit we watch on, I would say, streaming, right? Because now we have Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime.
Right.
And not that we use that for anything.
Yeah,
we don't. But so we have all these different streaming devices. I could see us decoupling. A little bit easier.
Completely?
You know, if we
had
HBO...
Well, you know, now that, like, they all charge, like, $9, $9 to $10 each for their packages. So, I mean, I really think we should think about it because I do think with Hulu, which gets us the next day of all, the only thing you don't get is you don't get to watch live TV of cable shows.
I got you. And I think
so. We could do antenna for like ABC, NBC,
right.
Those things and watch.
You're making my said antenna to fucking.
To Nick, dude. We got antenna?
But the antenna gets digital signal now. But you, and I'll say it maybe. No, I'll say it offline. I'll say it offline. So.
What?
Well, with the various subscription models, we already know people share passwords. Like, that's the ongoing joke. Like, I still have HBO because my uncle's brother's password, whatever. You know what I mean? But there probably could be a way for, like, a number of people, a set number of people, like six households.
Six households. I'm sure that's everybody does that.
To each have one and then all share together, right? I'm the Netflix guy. You're the Hulu girl. This person's HBO. That person's Showtime. And we all... nary the tween meet. I don't know if they'd like what the subscription providers would question six different IPs and logins.
Probably.
Or six different logins from six different devices.
Yeah, I'm going to guess they would see that as something to be
problematic.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Just a guess, but you know, whatever.
There's maybe a way around it.
You think there's a way around everything. So anyways, we're podcasting this week for Podcast Fandom, hosted by the lovely Nina Perez. You can subscribe to them, I think, via Patreon for premium episodes, but they review all sorts of television shows. They're really good reviews.
They put out
so much content. And
they have a great,
their Facebook group is amazing.
Fun,
I love it in there. Anytime I have a question about anything, you know, television, entertainment related, I go right in there and somebody there always knows, what's up, what's going on. So definitely check them out. Again, Podcast Fandom, you can follow them on Instagram, Twitter, and you can also find them on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And shout out to Nina.
You know, a little bit of how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
We spent some time today, to your chagrin, fucking with the audio. Because I'm trying to like,
audio.
Just sometimes the way the show is produced, I'm like, you know what? And we don't do post production. That's our style. Uh-huh. We got to get everything right on the front end, so we don't got to fuck with it on the back end.
Right.
A lot of people like to, you know, like I know like Ricky and some people like they love it. They'll sit like, you know, for an hour show, they happily spend 2 hours editing it. Not us. So
yeah,
we kind of got to get it right. And I appreciate that you spent the time. But the length of this episode, we're never going to be able to do it with that It's because it's a higher bit rate that sounded better.
Well, we might be able to.
It might be too big a file. We'll see. Maybe Johnners will have you're going to consume more data listening to the
listening
show.
Listening to this particular show.
This fucking podcast
costs me
$2.
Make sure you're on Wi-Fi,
bucks.
Everybody. Because, what the hell? Yeah. I guess that's it then.
I guess that's it. I like the John, but I ain't paying for it. The fucking data consumption.
Fucking John.
Good night, everybody.
High five.